The regular March meeting of the Cambria Community Services District Board of Directors will come to order. Please stand and join with me in the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag and country.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let the record reflect that all five board members are present, so we have a quorum. Council, is there a report from closed session?
We discussed various items as listed on the agendas for closed session, and direction was given to the negotiators and the council for the litigation listed, but no final actions were taken.
Thank you. Are there any additions, deletions, or consent calendar items to be pulled?
I would like to report from the Cambria Forest Committee. Would this be a good time, Mr. President?
Why don't we do it right after acknowledgments and presentations under special reports?
You're the boss.
Thank you.
I have one correction to the agenda.
Yes.
And that's in item 8B, under hearings and appeals, the Mission Country cost of living rate adjustment that is expressed on the agenda at 3.6% is an error, and the staff report reflects the correct adjustment at 3.04%.
So the 3.6%, as printed in the agenda, should be 3.04%?
Correct.
Is that correct? Thank you. Any other additions or deletions to the agenda? Hearing none, then the agenda stands as corrected. And we'll now move to acknowledgments and presentations, and we have a special proclamation to present this evening, and I'd like to turn this over to Joan Coben and Jim Ellman. Jim, would you like to come up to the microphone? And Joan, would you like to join Jim? It's all yours.
Thank you very much. We'd like to ask Jess Bathke if he would come forward as well. This is a proclamation recognizing tennis programs and facilities. Yeah, no doubt. Whereas his ability to ask critical questions and understand complex issues has been of great benefit to the effectiveness of the PROS Commission. And whereas in this, his role as chair of the Cambria Community Parks Subcommittee, he has strongly championed enhanced recreational opportunities for all age groups. And whereas he will continue to follow the work of the PROS Commission, and now, therefore, by the virtue of the authority vested in the President, Sanders, through me, the President of the Board of Directors, on behalf of the entire board, district staff, and all Cambrians, on this day, March 24th, I hereby present to Commissioner Bathke this proclamation of public recognition, extending to him our appreciation for his distinguished service and our best wishes for continued success in all his future endeavors. Thank you, Jess. I give you that.
Thank you, John.
It certainly has been a pleasure for me, and I know Jim has something.
I just want to say a few words, Mr. President, member of the boards, and community. Jess has been one of our more vocal commissioners, and he has served this community and as a PROS commissioner with a very high level of integrity. And I can say in the 4 years that he's been on the commission with us that he has actively been involved in all the parks and recreation activities that we've been discussing before the PROS Commission. And he's been very supportive of the community center as well as other parks and recreation activities. And he will be missed, I can tell you that. And he will be very difficult to replace Jess as a commissioner. And Jess, thank you very much for all your work.
Jess?
Thank you, Jim.
Would you like to say a few words?
Yes, President Sanders. I want to thank the CCSD board and CCSD administration and the PROS executive group, particularly Barbara Wellington and Jack Braleo, and of course Jim Elmans, for the opportunity to serve. I will continue to work with Jack Braleo on the Parks Subcommittee, but I think it's time for to let someone else step in. There are some really good candidates for this. Thanks a lot for your support.
Well, Jess, thank you, and I'd like to say enjoy your retirement. I know you've put in a lot of hours on this. It's sometimes been a virtual full-time job, and I thank you on behalf of the whole community.
Thank you.
Here. Right in slot there for the mic. Thank you.
Sorry, it didn't fit. Oh, yeah, there it goes.
One more big hand to Jess. The next item on the agenda is the Main Street traffic light issue, and I'd like to explain why this is on the CCSD's agenda. This is not typically something that your community services district gets involved with, but increasingly in Cambria, residents are looking to the district for answers to what are typically municipal services. We're not an incorporated city. We are a community services district. But heretofore, we haven't gotten involved in typically in very many road-related issues. But since there didn't seem to be a forum for a resolution of this issue, the board decided that it would be appropriate to place it on the agenda, provide the forum, and to invite representatives from the county to come down and see if some resolution can be reached. And Shirley Bianchi, our county supervisor, has graciously agreed to come down and be present this evening, along with Dave Flynn, who is the county's project manager for this project. And Shirley, in deference to your position, I will let you lead off the discussion.
Oh, thank you. I would have let it off anyway.
I'm sure you would have.
I have. I couldn't bring the EIR to the microphone with me because then I would have had to have entered it into the record. It's not mine to give away, but it is here if anybody would like to look at it before I leave. But I did copy off the front page, so there are seven copies, one for each board member and one for Mr. Montandon, one for Tammy, and you can have this one. So there will be one for somebody else as well. What I thought I would do would be to give a brief, very brief history of that light and then give a brief summation of what your options, what the community in exchange for being able to put a bank on this corner of the property, and that's what happened. The Mid-State Bank donated the property to the American Land Conservancy. And I'm not sure, you know, once it was donated and this project was finished, I was through with it. So I'm not sure whether the CSD owns the property now or whether the American Land Conservancy still owns it. That's irrelevant because it's not involved in the discussion. The EIR, however, had been done for the full development project. When the majority of the project was dropped, the EIR, the traffic section, was redone, and that's why I brought this, is because the firm that did the traffic study is, I highlighted it, I think, on everybody's, down toward the bottom. That traffic study was done specifically on this bank, and it was specifically on Pine Knolls Drive and the exit to the bank on that intersection. Dave has all of the exact details if you need those. The project then went through the normal governmental process that we have on all projects. The EIR, of course, went out for public comment and came back. The project went to the North Coast Advisory Council, and at the Advisory Council there were people who were not happy with the light, and I'm not sure what that final vote was at the North Coast Advisory Council in 2002. I don't keep those things in my head. On April 11th, 2002, the project went to the Planning Commission, and it was noticed in the paper. I believe there was an article written, you know, that it would be at the Planning Commission on April 11th, 2002. It was heard by the Planning Commission. There was a lot of discussion back and forth, including the light, and there were some people there in support of the project. No one objected to the light, and the light was always a public part of the project, of this Mid-State Bank project. The light was required as a mitigation for the traffic, and it was a condition for Mid-State Bank. Mid-State Bank paid for the traffic light. No tax dollars went into putting that light in. No one in April of 2002 appealed the Planning Commission decision. And the law states that if there is no appeal, the project becomes final and approved at the end of the appeal period. So it never came to the Board of Supervisors. It was a done deal at that time. The only recourse, I believe, and this is when I get to what can happen now, the citizens have a right to petition their government for a redress of grievances. The way we usually do this, and it's only happened like once or twice since I've been on the board, is the citizens come to the public comment period at the board and request that the item, a reconsideration of the traffic light, be put on the board agenda for a future date for discussion. Now, a gentleman emailed me and said, oh, put that on the agenda. Well, I can't do that because I'm the government. You know, I don't petition myself. And furthermore, I'm only one of four. It takes a majority, either a majority or a four-fifths vote, I'm not sure which, to put it on the agenda. That's why the public has to come to the public comment period and ask to have us agendize this. It may be put on a future agenda for discussion, or it may not. I can't answer for the other four board members. But that's the process that light has to go through. I cannot wave a wand on a legal decision and say, oh, well, we don't like that. It has to go away. There's a legal process that we have to go through. But I would say for the listening public that the CCSD board had nothing to do with the light. So the public shouldn't slam the CCSD board. It was not your decision.
I think most members of the public understand that.
Well, I understand that you'd gotten a lot of static, and that's why I was here.
It's not that we've gotten static in terms of a request to do something about it. We got a lot of static in terms of
2002-2003 when the realization of the light was coming forth. And at that time, we described the operations that was going on out here, which was Cambria Drive and Main Street, where we had discussions about a possible roundabout. Cambria Drive and Route 1, where a signal will be going in as part of the flood control project, and Pine Knolls. And at that time, we reviewed it, and we said, well, Pine Knolls isn't something that is really something you would put the traffic signal in right away, but it is in the circulation study, and it always has been. So as this is consistent with the circulation study and our ultimate goal on Main Street, it's always been a plan and recommendation of the department that the signal go in.
I guess the operative question is when, though. It's in a plan, but at what point would there be a sufficient amount of traffic to justify the light. That seems to be the crux of the issue.
Yeah, again, with mitigation, and specifically a project mitigation like this, you would get the mitigation done up front, as there's no recourse to come back and secure the money or the installation later. If we look down the road at Tamsin Drive and the development that occurred there in the mid-'80s, you know, there was no mechanism for establishing any control at that location, and the county would have to come up with any money to do any work there in the future. So, and this is typically done by agencies to get the mitigation done up front, as opposed to waiting for inflation to take over or never getting those improvements.
I understand, but at what time in the future would the traffic light be warranted?
Well, again, from the Fear and Peer study, they showed that there were delays occurring from exiting the bank parking lot, the left turn maneuver, and that's what warrants the traffic signal. And that would occur really with heavy peak hour traffic.
So your position is that the traffic light is warranted today?
That's correct.
Okay. Maybe at this juncture it would be appropriate to open up the hearing we're having here to public comments. We normally require that a yellow slip be filled out, but as president, I'm going to exercise some discretion and make an exception in this case. I would just ask that those who come up to the microphone, please limit your comments to no more than 3 minutes. And try not to be redundant. If a point is made, it doesn't have to be repeated over and over again. So with that, is there anybody in the audience who would like to come up and address this issue? Norm Fleming is raising his hand.
Norman Fleming. I live at the top of the hill and come down Pine Knolls Drive at least twice a day. Something has to be done. Cars coming from Cookie Crock have no idea that there's descending traffic waiting ahead of them. And there's no way that I can see around to watch traffic from Cookie Crock unless I put my front of my car out in the middle of the street. So something has to be done there. Either a flashing warning sign to slow people, or put a sign that there's an intersection looming in the near corner. Whether they have traffic lights or not, we have to have either a warning for people coming out of Cookie Crock, or maybe return to the escape lane we used to have. But if you see the increase in traffic, there's traffic turning eastward from Cambria Drive, and traffic coming eastward from the West End. So there's a constant flow of traffic there. And then when it gets complicated by people coming out of the bank, then it's a real hazard to get across it. I know no accidents have happened yet, but sooner or later they will.
When you mentioned the escape lane, you were referring, Norm, to the lane that was in the center of the street that allowed you to accelerate after you make your turn,
right,
in order to merge
it
with the traffic.
It gives you some place to park where people can see you. Hopefully nobody will trespass in that escape lane. But at least I think if we don't have the lights, which I think we need them, it should have a warning sign from people coming out from Cookie Crock that there's an intersection looming ahead and they better slow down or stop.
Thank you. Mr. Hawley.
My name is Richard Hawley. I'm a resident of Cambria. I've been intimately involved with the Mid-State Bank project since its inception back in the late 80s. Actually appealed the project and helped kill the larger development. And as the EIRs were, the supplemental EIRs, and
be too simple of a solution, Rick. But thank you. And the
Mr.
chairman
President,
of the Planning Commission is here.
Members of
Welcome.
The board, my name is Doreen Liberto Blanc. I'm on the County Planning Commission. I'm not here speaking for the Planning Commission, but I'm here as somebody who was on the Planning Commission at the time. And I'd like to make a few clarifications. First of all, I believe, Mr. President, you had asked at what time was the, or what time is the traffic signal warranted. And it just so happens, while I recycled my EIR after the meeting, unfortunately I don't have a copy, I did call the EIR consultant this afternoon because I had the question. And I asked him the same thing. And I do want to tell you that there were three traffic signals and three different intersections that were looked at as part of the EIR. And in particular, Highway 101 and Cambria Drive, and they looked at the existing traffic, also looked at existing traffic plus the project. Looked at Highway 101 and Cambria Drive and Main Street, and Pine Knolls Drive and Main Street. So if we look at existing traffic, 101 and Cambria Drive is existing at that time, is at operating at level of service F, which means that a signal was warranted based on existing. Cambria Drive and Main Street operating existing at F. Pine Knoll and Main at existing 2002, C. If you look at existing and the project, of course, 101 and Cambria Drive and Cambria Drive and Main, F. With the project, Pine Knolls and Main became F. And so it was at the time that the project's constructed that the traffic signal was warranted. And that's according to the EIR consultant and the traffic study. So I do want to clarify that. Also tell you that there was a great deal of discussion at the Planning Commission about whether we needed a traffic signal on any location. We talked about, what if we put in a roundabout? What if we put in stop signs? Is there any way that we can prevent traffic signals going in? So this wasn't something that we just said, gee, let's put in traffic signals. It was discussed in detail. And I will tell you that county staff told us that we needed it, and the traffic consultant told us we needed it. And I will also tell you that there were several people in the audience that supported this project, knowing that there would be a traffic signal installed. And no one appealed the project, and it went forward. And so I feel bad for Supervisor Bianchi, because she also is getting a lot of heat. It never went to the board. It went to the Planning Commission. And I, as the Planning Commissioner that heard this project and voted for the project, made the motion for this project, would be more than happy to meet with anybody that has questions about it. So if you have any questions about it, I'd be more than happy to discuss it with any of you or anybody in the audience.
Appreciate that very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Can I ask
you
a question?
Question.
One thing that I remember in this project was traffic calming.
What's what? I'm sorry.
Traffic calming. And that hasn't been mentioned tonight, and I wonder if that's something you'd want to discuss or mention.
Traffic calming?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember the details of it. I know that we discussed a variety of different methods of what could we do to prevent a traffic signal going in. I don't remember, and I'm not a traffic engineer. You'd want to talk to probably Dave about that in more detail. But I know that we did talk about a variety of ways to find out if we did not have to have a traffic signal going in. Mm-hmm. And we were told by the traffic engineers that it had to go in, that the level of service went to F once the project was built.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
All right.
Appreciate it. Is Jerry Levitz here? Jerry, I think you wanted to give the NCAC's position on this, or at least the traffic committee, NCAC traffic committee position.
I am I'm Jerry Levitz, chairman of the traffic committee for the NCAC. The position of the traffic committee is we don't want any signal on Main Street, period. Now, that's the traffic committee. The traffic committee then brought it back to the NCAC for the reason that I received at least 15 emails saying they do not want a signal. Now, our job on the NCAC is to advise the supervisor. And in this case, if I'm getting emails and getting people saying they don't want the traffic signal, then it's only right for me to bring it back to the board and let the board vote on it. And we had a 63 vote to deactivate the signal, and the three votes that voted for it really didn't vote that they wanted the traffic signal. Even if you ask Shirley doesn't want a signal on Main Street. It's the system. Here's about that signal. But like a lot of things, there's been a lot of wrong information. A year ago, our committee thought that this was approved by the Coastal Commission. Now we find out it's the EIR. Well, we were sort of told a year ago, Coastal Commission, this is a done deal, lay off. Now as we find out it's the EIR, and now we get a lot of response from concerned citizens, it's our job now to go back and advise the supervisor. Now the supervisor has been advised. Now she said, as she said, we have to now take it to the Board of Supervisors and have them make a decision. They voted for it, they're going to have to deactivate it. So from there, that's the position of the NCAC.
Great.
But there again, I don't think anyone in this room really wants signals on Main Street. I think we can live without them. It's like when the signal at Cambria Drive and Main Street was scheduled for like next year, we put the stop sign in, and that's working fine. So we pushed that signal back to 2010. 2010, if I'm on that committee, we're not going to have that signal. We're going to fight it. We don't want any signals on Main Street. That's the traffic committee's position.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jerry. Appreciate it. Is there anybody else that would like to address the Mark Kramer? Then you two gentlemen will be next in turn.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you.
I want to pick up on where Rick led off. I think, speaking for a good piece of the community, we were so happy after 2 years of fundraisers every other week, and when we were able to retire the East-West Ranch, we would have done anything for Mid-State Bank in connection with this program. And I think myself, just like many other people, we're not focused or we're not cognizant of what was going on in connection with the traffic light at the time. And I would just like to say that it was our understanding that the decision to install the traffic signal was predicated on a county estimate of a population growth to 20,000 people, which now appears closer to 8,000, and a shopping center to be built next to the new Mid-State Bank. Since we will not be building a shopping center now, since there will be no additional traffic at Pine Knolls because the area is well built out, and since there has been no additional bank traffic over the last year, and since the population projections are unrealistic, and most important, since we've already demonstrated that we can handle the intersection without a traffic light and without an accident over the past year, we, as well as many of our Cambria citizens, strongly recommend that the county supervisors deactivate and take down the traffic light. Now, I won't bother reading this letter. I think Rick Arricchio was supposed to be here tonight, and I think his letter kind of got the ball started, and I think you already have that, Shirley. But the only point, the additional point that I want to make is that, yes, the traffic light went through, but I think it's almost analogous to somebody being sentenced for a big crime, and all of a sudden the DNA comes out and says, some of this evidence really isn't the kind of evidence that was used, and what was the evidence that was used to prosecute the particular person is no longer valid. So I would like to hope that we can get the appropriate forum, get the appropriate item on the agenda, Shirley, so that we can get this thing reversed. And that's it.
Good. Thank you. Yes, sir. You wanted to come up and address the board.
I always get nervous when I get in front of this mic, but about 10 or 12 years ago, I was at a committee meeting talking about Cambridge Drive and Main Street, and they had these ideas. They wanted to put traffic signals, and most everyone was against it. And I said, well, if you have to do it, this is an old community. Find the old traffic lights they used to have in Whittier where the thing went cling, and it went up and said stop. And then it went cling, cling, and it went down, and the green came up. Now, I believe that...
That was a long time ago.
Well, I was not... Well, it was only 1940.
Seems well, like yesterday, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, especially when you get to be my age. But I think that if they have to have traffic signals, they should be thinking in terms of something different than these steel monsters they've put up here that you put on the highway. It's fine on the highway, but you got this little community. Give us something that fits the community. Cambria Drive, I think, needs it. And Jerry says, no, we won't have any traffic lights on Main Street. Well, that's one voice, but I think if you ask everybody, it would be nice to have a traffic signal here at Main Street and Cambria Drive. I like the signal here because I can see what happens when the people trying to get out.
You stole the words right from my mouth.
I'd like to thank the, my name is Ken Dawson, Cambria resident. I'd like to thank the board for letting this issue be aired in a public forum. I haven't heard a reconciliation between what I think the planning commissioner said, that the traffic signal is warranted, and that Dave Flynn implies there's one warrant that's met. I have had some experience in traffic engineering, and I think you have to meet all the warrants before you even consider a signal under the manual of traffic design that Caltrans and I believe the county uses. It seems to me, unless the county can really reconcile their fact concerning the signal being warranted, that the community should follow up with what our supervisor suggested and petition to have the signal deactivated. It seems to me it's probably several years too soon relative to the actual traffic. Thank you.
Thank you. And I saw one more hand. We'll have one more. Thank you. Is there another one? Okay. All right.
Jerry Farrell, Wood Drive. My concern is not so much the light. My concern is the beautification area with the dividers. And I don't know if they've... It's so narrow as it is. I worry about emergency vehicles more than anything. It's just a concern.
That concern is shared by our fire chief, as a matter of fact. All right, we do have some more who would like to speak. Yes, sir?
My name is Stanton Child. I'm a 26-year resident of Pine Knolls. I agree with Norm Fleming. If you put that light in tomorrow, it would be none too soon. Every time I turn on left turn, I don't know whether I'm going to get killed or not. So I've also lived on Lodge Hill. I've lived on Park Hill. And in my opinion, it's one of the most dangerous intersections in the town. So you can't put the light in too soon for me. If it was tomorrow, that'd suit me fine.
Would you agree with Norm Fleming that maybe an alternative might be satisfactory?
Some kind of a stop sign. I don't care how you stop them, but as long as you stop them. Because when you go to make a left turn towards the grammar school, you can't see the traffic coming. You've got about 1 or 2 seconds to get across that street. Somebody's going to get killed in that intersection.
Right.
So.
Thank you.
Other than that, I agree with Norm Fleming.
Thank you. Bill Warren.
Yes. Bill Warren. Until recently, I was on the traffic committee of the NCAC, and my point is I don't ever recall, and I've been on that committee for over 10 years, I don't recall this issue ever coming before the traffic committee, which is the first place it should come. And I'm only talking about the present Mid-State Bank project, not prior to that 5 or 8 years ago, talking about this one. I remember when it came before the Planning Commission. I was out of town, I wasn't there, but there was so much euphoria for the fact that we've got that free land that if the signal was mentioned or discussed, it was overlooked. And I was on the Cambria Design Plan Program for the East and West Village, right out here, and that signal was never recommended by that group. And this was supposed to be wide open, and that was okayed by the Coastal Commission and the Board of Supervisors and the Planning Commission and the NCAC.
Thank you.
My point is I don't think the signal was ever discussed locally.
Thank you. Jess?
Thank you, Greg. I don't know whether the traffic light is required or not, but I was thinking about this problem, and it seems to me a potential alternative solution might be to turn it on and have it blink red coming from Midstate Bank and from the hill and blink yellow on Main Street. That would provide the caution that one of the gentlemen, I think Norm mentioned that. So I would think that might be an alternate solution.
Thank you. Jerry McKinnon in the back.
Jerry McKinnon. This reminds me of the old story about the blind people examining the elephant from different points of view. I think our elephant is the whole Main Street enhancement. If we're going to look at that traffic light as one element of the Main Street enhancement, that would suit me just fine. How many parking places have to a place where traffic can move in a normal fashion? Thank you.
Thank you. Joellen Butler.
My name is Joellen Butler, and I'm a 35-year resident of Cambria. And I was on the design committee, and there were no lights in the design committee standards that we put together. And I also was here when the Midstate Bank project was being fought, and Rick's right about that. It changed everything when the shopping center and the motel rooms didn't go in. Future changes will be when the elementary school moves up to the other side of town. There won't be the mothers and fathers picking up their kids after school every single afternoon, dropping them in the morning. That will help the traffic some also. These lights are overscaled, and they really don't belong on Main Street. And as an alternative, maybe another four-way stop would work. You could have a stop at the driveway, a stop at Pine Knolls, and a stop on either side of Main Street with signage letting people know that it was coming. And we wouldn't have those eyesores on Main Street.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
My name is Doreen Menick, and I also live in Pine Knolls. It's been much harder to get down the hill and out left on Main Street since the stop sign went in. It used to be that you could just wait till the traffic cleared and then you could go. But now the traffic is just boom, 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 intermittent, where it's much harder to get to make a left turn off of Pine Knolls onto Main Street.
The stop sign at Cambria?
Yes, right here, Main Street and Cambria Drive. That has greatly increased the danger of getting off of the hill. I do not like the looks of the stop sign. I would like to see it smaller, but I think we really need it. And I think there's a lot of people that live over on the Hillcrest area, all those small streets, Ida Court, that would come down Pine Knolls Drive if there was a stop sign at the bottom, rather than coming down Hillcrest, which I feel is a much more dangerous street. And again, I don't like the looks of it, but I think we need it. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we'll close the public comments portion now and see if we can get some sort of process established here. Shirley, you've been very gracious and you agreed to stay to the end of this. Would you mind coming back up and maybe we can have a dialogue here with the board and figure out what process can be followed so that the Board of Supervisors can make a decision on this. You mentioned that you think it would be most appropriate for people to come down to the board meeting and during the public comment portion of the meeting address this issue and ask the board to put it on the agenda. What if our board asked the Board of Supervisors to put it on the agenda? Could we save people the trouble of going down to the Board of Supervisors hearing?
Well, it would be more appropriate if someone could come at the public comment period. You could come and, you know, if there's a vote of the board, then you could come and make that request to have it agendized. There are a lot of issues associated with that light, and taking it out, leaving it in, all this, you know, you guys have been in government long enough to know that no decision is really easy. So I think probably it would be best if someone could come to the public comment period, but not Tuesday, because we're not meeting on Tuesday. We never meet on a fifth Tuesday. So anytime after that.
Great. Dave Flynn, are you still here? Sure. Dave, would you stand up for a few minutes? I'm sure there are alternatives. Is it possible for your department to work on some alternatives pending a decision of the Board of Supervisors as to whether or not they're going to entertain a discussion of this item, so that you'd be prepared to address those alternatives if and when the board takes it up?
He would be addressing those issues. Yeah. We could, the process is, the person comes, whoever it is, to the board during the public comment period, requests to have...
Surely, we understand that.
Well,
we understand.
Maybe you don't, because you were asking him to do something that was pretty much not part of the process. You asked to have it put on the agenda. The board discusses whether they want to put it on the agenda.
Indicated, or would be far less effective if you just had a flashing light that doesn't provide positive control for access on the main street, which the signal provides.
But I'll ask you again, are there alternatives?
Well, the alternative is the signal as proposed that we would recommend as a department.
Are there alternative designs? Is there a smaller facility? Is there something that's more in keeping with the character of Main Street?
And I can appreciate, you know, the concern about the size of the signals, but we, as many agencies, have to follow set standards, and those standards are the size of the signal that you see out there today. There's not like a reduced size or a smaller type of facility we could put out there.
And as far as trying to complicate the procedure is anyone, either the board, either the CCSD board, or a member of the public, merely comes to our public comment period, asks to have it put on the agenda. I would make a motion to have it put on the agenda. That motion may or may not pass.
Understood. Thank you.
That's a relatively simple process.
Thank you. Board members, any comments?
I think Chief had his hand up.
Chief, were you raising your hand? I'm sorry, I overlooked you.
That's okay. The only thing I wanted to say, and I can say it after you take your action, is I wanted to say something publicly. To Dave, a concern that we have as the fire department regarding the access to the light itself. I don't know if you want me to do it now or after the
sure,
board.
Sure, go ahead.
The one concern that we have, and I've talked with the resident engineer.
Yeah, okay. You can take the microphone there, Chief.
You're a good-looking guy.
Exactly.
Well, I wanted to keep it simple so we didn't have to drag this out. The one thing I've talked about with the resident engineer is the concern that we have currently is that the way that Pine Knolls is graded, that it's called an angle of approach for us when we go uphill, and we can make that okay, but it's a fairly steep transition from a flat road to a fairly steep road. On the other hand, coming down, if you go home tonight or look tomorrow, you'll see several large scrapes at the bottom of the hill and in the intersection, and those are made by the CDF fire engine and our fire engine coming down the hill. When our crews come down, we have to ease through that gully at the bottom because it's so steep, and the front end of the frame rails are digging into the street because it's such a steep transition. That means our crews are at risk when they go across there because they have to ease through it without damaging the underside of the fire engine and then have to punch the engine literally to get across because the traffic's going fairly fast through there. So one of the concerns I would have is that as the Main Street Enhancement Project goes through is that they regrade that Pine Knolls downslope so that we can safely transition it, because it's not just us, it's UPS and the garbage trucks. I've talked with them as well. So that's a concern that bothers us right now. It's damaging equipment and it's slowing down our response.
What about the medians in Main Street?
Well, I'm still waiting. I know that the county's going to go back out to contract with that, and we were told that we would be able to drive over those medians. Right now they're way too steep to drive over, so I'm going to wait and see when the projects rebid what the medians look like, and I'm told that the center meetings will still be able to pass over, and if that's the case, then I think we'll be fine with that. But right now, it's still up in the air. We can't drive over them the way they're configured right now.
Thank you. Any questions of the chief? Board members, any comments, questions, discussion?
Supervisor said that the government couldn't redress the government. I assume we're part of the government, so it would be inappropriate for the CSD to do this. It is very appropriate for private individuals to do it.
Director Coben?
I guess just as an individual, I think we should just urge people to go ahead and follow what Supervisor Bianchi's telling us to do and see if we can get something moving. It doesn't seem to belong here for us to take any particular action or even if
I'd like to respond by suggesting that the agency that's, or at least the group that would be most likely to represent the community is the NCAC. That's what they're there for. They're an advisory committee, and there are both the members, active members of the NCAC traffic committee. I think Jerry was on it, and Bill Warren isn't on it anymore, but it certainly has a history. So there is a in place essential organization that could go down and represent the concerns of the community.
Any other board member comments? Jerry Levitz, are you still here? Jerry, can you step up to the mic?
To get down there, I would suggest you have as many of the concerned members of the community to follow down, because numbers looking at numbers of people representing it rather than just a single representative has a lot more power than in convincing them that the community is really behind it. So you might want to organize a group down there as you go down.
Great. Director Coben.
Well, and just to add to that, is to come with your suggestions. I tried to jot down what different people have said, to put them down and maybe as a group come with them some priority order or some. So you go with the suggestion, not just we don't like it. So take some of the ideas that have come out of this meeting and put them down and go forward with some kind of a plan, a request. That would be my suggestion. Thanks.
Supervisor Bianchi, thank you for coming. We appreciate it. There is a sense that I think you've gotten from the people in attendance here.
I have that sense already.
Great. And there is a process to follow here to get this onto the Board of Supervisors' agenda, and perhaps the board will decide to do something about it. Thank you all for coming, for those of you who are here on the traffic light issue. Appreciate it very much. We'll now move on to special reports, and Director Funky Ballou, you wanted to report on the Forest Committee meeting.
Thank you. God, I'm opening my mouth and everybody's leaving. I don't... I can't tell a joke in public.
Not your jokes, anyway.
I'm just going to wait till it clears up a little
That's
bit.
Fine. People are really exercising. Okay. Let's have order so that we can continue. Director Funky Ballou.
Thank you. Last night, I participated in the Cambria Forest Committee meeting, whose chairman, by the way, is Chief Putney. And the committee has done some wonderful things, and I'm not sure if the community as a whole is aware of it. The committee has initiated and created and brought to the community a forest management plan designed to preserve and enhance the forest in which we live. Objective has always been, ever since I was elected, is to do everything I can possibly do to enhance the safety and lives of not only my community but my family in here. And I strongly believe that the forest management plan is designed to protect and enhance the forest and therefore the safety and lives of our community. It's not a coincidence that the chief of the Cambry Fire Department is its chairman. We have tried as a committee to take this management plan and apply it to the community to enhance all of our lives, including the forest, of course. I would like, therefore, Ms. Rudock, to ask that on behalf of the committee, to place a forest management and safety matter 10-minute demonstration that several of our members would like to present to the community to further illustrate the importance of the forest to our lives. And I've been advised that we can present this demonstration in approximately 10 minutes, 15 at the outside. And I would like to do that for the next meeting, which is, what, April 28th? Is that the meeting? And perhaps the best way to describe it is forest management and safety, because that's what it's about. And that's... I was deputized to make this request today. Did I do the job okay there? Okay, all right.
Under the bylaws, the president has the authority to place an item on the agenda, so consider it done. You bet.
Subject to staff addressing review comments we received from Department of Water Resources that were outlined to you during that meeting. We did address those comments. I got a review back from them today. There's two minor points I still need to cover with them, and then it looks like we'll have that behind us as far as satisfying the DWR requirements. Those particular review comments were related to trying to quantify, the effectiveness of our existing water conservation efforts, which we can do on a global scale based on a number of connections that have occurred since 1989 and so forth. And the second one was to talk a little bit more about public outreach efforts. So I plan to talk that over with the DWR staff person I've been dealing with tomorrow and hopefully finish up and wrap up those comments. I also like to thank Kathy Cho, who's sitting next to me. She helped out quite a bit in the word processing on that. And indeed, I had to chase down the UPS truck to get that out. So thank you, Kathy. Moving on, the state Prop 50 grant funding for desalination. We did submit a $5 million grant application for desalination back in January on this Prop 50 funding. And that is going through the review with the State Department of Water Resources, a different department than the one we're dealing with on the Urban Water Management Plan. I just outlined a few of the keys there for the timeline. But if we're successful in getting that grant money, we can apply that to the local share of the federal money for desal, which is the Water Resource Development Act Fund. So that would be nice if we're successful there. Basically, some key dates around the 3rd of May, DWR will present some of their draft funding recommendations. Right now, there's about $71.5 million in requests versus $50 million being available. So how they do that, we'll find out. if we're lucky enough to be among the agencies chosen, or how they're going to divvy up that money. Around the second week of May, they plan to make a decision on their funding, and then they're going to go forward with their negotiations with contracts in June and follow it up to try to have their contracts executed by around the 1st of December for that grant money. So we'll keep our fingers crossed, and we'll keep you posted on how that evolves. The other item that we're working on is the build-out reduction plan, and that's with RBF. We're going to be reviewing with them Thursday of next week some of their preliminary work on their progress of the financial model. So that'll be an interesting meeting for us to have. Other than that, they are working on the report production, which will crank up quite a bit in the month of April. They're still planning on having an administrative draft for review sometime in May of this year. That ties into the water master plan. We're looking towards getting the build-out reduction findings to address the growth-inducing aspects of a water project. So once we get that, we'll start wrapping up the water master plan EIR. That's a program-level EIR that we're shooting for. The estimated completion of a draft review copy would be sometime in July of this year. And then once that's available, we start a 45-day public review period. The 45-day public review period then is followed by a hearing. The hearing, we then respond to comments and tie that into a final EIR. So the estimate right now for certifying a final EIR range from the late summer to early fall of this year. The next item we're working on is the desalination project. The main activities occurring this last month have been related to acquiring permits to allow for our geotechnical study that's out on the San Simeon Beach area, as well as coordinating with the Army Corps of Engineers. The geohydrological study that we are doing will provide data to assess the feasibility of a subsurface beach collector well. And we need good data to really determine that feasibility. We have right now three permits that are out there to get the permission to do the drilling. One is with the county, and that's a minor use permit application. Another is with the California Coastal Commission, and that's a coastal development permit. There's two jurisdictions here because of where the drilling occurs. The mean high tide line, if you're above that, you're within the county jurisdiction. If you're below it, you're within the Coastal Commission jurisdiction. That's why we have two parallel efforts going here. The other is we have an Army Corps of Engineers permit. It's a 404 permit related to navigable waterways over geologic time from the creek and so forth, and materials have been deposited in the beach. So it's roughly 110 feet of depth to maybe 60 to 70, and then it kind of flattens out around 10 feet of depth. We want to drill a series of holes to actually pull core samples out to see what it consists of. And that's the best way to really pin this down to determine the feasibility. There's also two monitoring wells that would allow us to sample water and to actually pump water out, and they're probably 6 inches in diameter or so. And that's the gist of the work. Logistically, it presents quite a challenge for us. And permitting-wise, it's quite a challenge as well. Did I answer your question enough on that?
Yes.
I'm glad to get into details. I tend to get carried away on details at times.
Okay.
The work with the Army Corps involves completing two binders. One is they call their Project Cooperation Agreement binder, and the other is a Project Management Plan binder. And we've been providing supporting documents on and off for quite a while now with the Army Corps. I spoke with their project manager earlier today. He does have what they call the PCA binder together, has done at least an initial review with people in his office, and he feels like he's in good shape on that. The project management plan binder, I know he's working on that. He's going to send me a review copy Wednesday of next week, at which time we'll turn that around as quickly as we possibly can, and then once he finalizes those two binders, they go up the ladder in his chain of command. And it'll probably be about a two-month process before they can be approved by, I believe they end up going to Washington, D.C. And I don't know what level in the Army, off the top of my head, they end up getting approved by.
So prior to the time the Corps of Engineers signs the project cooperative agreement, these two binders have to be approved. Is that what you're saying?
They are part of the approval package that he sends to Washington, D.C. And they will review those binders in detail. And then once they're approved, they can sign final sign off on the agreement. That once that is signed off, then they can start administering the project, and then the appropriations to date would cover 75% of the project cost. So we're not there yet. We're probably a couple months away yet.
Yeah, obviously, it's in our best interest that they sign that as soon as possible so that they start picking up the majority of the tab for all of the reports, studies, investigations, and so forth that we still have to do.
Right, and we're forging ahead with local funding on right. our 100% of our cost to continue to make progress in the meantime.
Right.
Okay. The other projects, Pine Knolls Tank Replacement Project, we have three appeals that have been made to the Coastal Commission level to the Coastal Development Permit that was approved by the County Planning Commission during its February 10th meeting. We expect this item to be heard by the Coastal Commission during its April meeting in Santa Barbara. Other projects that are under development right now, staff is planning to meet next Thursday to talk about the old water yard pumping station replacement, and we will be working on a scope of work related to that particular project. So that's all I have to report today, unless there's some questions.
Any questions of the district engineer? I have one request to speak on this item from the audience, Jerry McKinnon.
Jerry McKinnon again. One question, not on the technicalities, except how do we pay for these future studies and the test boring? Where does the money come from? Does it come from the general fund? Does it come from the money that is collected on our water bills? Where does the money come from? If it comes from the general fund, could that surplus property tax be used to pay for that? Thank you.
It does not come from the general fund. Tammy, would you like to give him the specifics?
It's coming from our water enterprise revenues, or what's left over, our reserve fund. Those are where those monies are coming from.
Right. Thank you. Thank you, Bob. We'll now move on to managers and board reports. The first report is from the general manager, Tammy.
Okay, mine's kind of brief tonight. I just want to give a final reminder, because we won't meet again, to mention the Mission Country Disposal Spring Cleanup Week, April 25th through 29th. So all the residents in Cambria who are Mission Country customers, which that should be everybody, has an opportunity to dispose of excess trash, recycling, or yard waste, and they can even call Mission Country directly and set up a special pickup for any large items like old washers or dryers or water heaters or old furniture, and there is a small fee for our full commission. There was discussion about a ceremony for the Crosstown Trail project, specifically the pedestrian crossway, and a decision was made to just hold off any type of ribbon-cutting ceremony until the project is more complete, since there are still remaining segments of that project. And then there was just a preliminary review of the recreational survey that was distributed several months ago, and there's some more discussion and work to be done on the draft form of that survey, and then the post commissioners want to decide how to bring that to the board and how to distribute it to the public. The next post commission meeting is Wednesday, April 13th at 5 o'clock p.m. in our Suite 204. This month we will not have a public service announcement by Joyce Hannum, but as promised, Joellen Butler of North Coast Swap is here, and she will be reporting quarterly at these evening meetings on their activities. So if she's still here, she can approach the podium and give her report. And that will be all after she finishes.
Good evening. I'm
Joellen
Butler. I'm Executive Director of North Coast Swap, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to talk to you quarterly each year, and I meet
once a month with Tammy, and we kind of go over what SWAP is doing and what CCSD is doing with respect to the ranch. And I talk with Ben on almost a daily basis about what's happening on the ranch. And then North Coast SWAP has been meeting with Connie Davidson and working on the Bluff Trail project. We've made comments on the preliminary plan and the wetland study for that project and done several walkthroughs out there to kind of talk about how to keep the trail as natural as possible and still make it ADA compliant. I wanted to tell you that North Coast SWAP has been a sponsor member of the Land Trust Alliance since we were formed, and we've adopted their land trust standards and practices in the past. And they just came out with a 2004 revision, and we passed a resolution to adopt the 2004 revised standards and practices as well. And as a result of that, we've done a written monitoring plan for the ranch, and we're working on a procedure for conservation easement violations on the East-West Ranch, which we didn't have before. And we've been planning to do volunteer work days on a once-a-month basis out on the ranch, but there's been a problem with the new Cal OSHA safety requirements that for us. So I've been working with Ben Bohr on how to come up with a written plan and what to do in order to meet those requirements that the CCSD has. And we think we've come up with a plan, and we plan to do our first volunteer work day on April 9th at 9 a.m. It's a Saturday morning, and we'll meet at the south entrance to the ranch on Windsor and do some mustard eradication and probably thistles as well. There are quite a few of them down there. I've also kind of taken over the responsibility for talking to the different representatives on the cell tower project. And it's gone through a lot of changes. It's really hard to keep in touch with those people. Singular has the contract with the CCSD, but Singular sold all their assets to T-Mobile in order to buy AT&T Mobile. And so I've been trying to track down who to talk to at T-Mobile. I've talked to three different people now and still haven't come to the person who can tell us what's going on at this point. And as soon as I know, I will let Tammy know, and hopefully we can go forward from there. I wanted to let you know we'll do our annual monitoring for the conservation easement. We'll start it probably mid-April, and we hope to have the monitoring report done for you and for us and for the Coastal Conservancy by the end of May. So I should be able to present that to you then. And we're planning our first annual Cambria Wildflower Show to be held at the Vets Hall. It's an educational event. A group of people who are not in SWAP came to SWAP about doing this, and I was one of them. But there's one in Pacific Grove every year that's absolutely wonderful, and they show little vials and vases and jars of wildflowers on tables. We'll also have a photo show of wildflowers at it. And then finally, I've been in contact with the American Land Conservancy, and they had promised a plaque to donors of $5,000 to be placed on the ranch, and they are working on it. And they think it should be done by summer, and we're planning on placing it on the ranch when the Bluff Trail improvement project is complete. Then we'll have a better idea of where to place it. And we've also gone forward with the recognition benches for the major donors to the the East-West Ranch purchase. And those plaques are at the manufacturers now, and we should have them on the benches in probably 6 weeks. And that's it. Are there any questions?
Board members, questions? Director Coven.
I'm excited, having put a lot of my own blood, sweat, and tears in this ranch, and hear you talk about these things. It's really exciting to see it all happening. I just wanted to ask, would it be possible maybe each time you report to us to give it just some of the facts in writing, you know, just the bullets of dates and when things are happening? Because for me, that would be very helpful.
I'll do that.
I don't want you to write a report, but just list out some of the items.
What I can do is just email this to you, I just read tonight, if that's good.
That would be great.
Okay.
You know, Joan, what kills me is that I remember when Jo Ellen was like a ninja trailblazer, and now she's government. She's running the show. It's like unbelievable, isn't it?
She's the czarina of the
You have to tell the story. She was actually arrested on the ranch.
I know, and Elon paid my fine.
Yeah. You didn't tell us you were a convicted felon.
It wasn't a felony.
Oh, that's good. Thank God. Okay. Thank you.
Could I just ask Tammy
Director
one other
Coven.
Thing? Sorry. Tammy, are you going to then call the meeting that you mentioned in your report of the ad hoc directors committee?
Yes, I will. I'll coordinate that probably next week with the two of you.
All right. Great.
Great.
Thank you. Thank you.
Any other questions of the general manager? We'll move on to the fire chief's report. Chief Putney. Good evening.
Good evening again. You have my report in front of you. There's a couple of highlights that I want to cover. And then real quickly, I want to go through some slides for a couple of reasons. First is, I think important to note is Captain Gallagher, just after last month's board meeting, went to the Head Start program here in Cambria to check car seat installations in primarily Spanish-speaking families. Out of the 10 car seats that he inspected, and there was another inspector there, all 10 seats were either improperly installed or they were improperly assembled, which means if there would have been a car accident, the child would have either been severely injured or probably killed. I think this is a great program. He does most of this on his day off. It's a labor of love for him. And his idea is that he won't have to see a child with a car seat dismantled inside of a car that didn't survive just because the car seat wasn't installed properly or wasn't assembled properly. And I think it's a great thing, and I certainly appreciate what he does, and our staff's real motivated as well. He's one of only three fire department members in the whole county. Primarily the other installers are law enforcement and child advocates through Law Enforcement Extended.
Chief, if somebody in town wants some assistance in properly installing a car seat, they can call the fire department.
Just call the fire department.
He will help out?
That's correct. 927-6240. We'd be glad to help out. The Fire Safe Focus Group has been finalizing the Cambria evacuation plan. I'd like to thank my staff of the department, the Fire Safe Focus Group members, and especially Ken Renshaw, who spent a lot of time smithing and really making, I think, some great graphics. We're going to have the first plan in San Luis Obispo County if the Fire Safe Council of San Luis Obispo County approves it, which I'm sure they will. That will be 8.5 by 11. The other ones have been trifold, and really Cambria's map and street situation doesn't lend itself to putting on a trifold. It makes the map and the streets too small. And we gave it to some test folks in the community, and they said, I can't read it even with my glasses on. So we abandoned the trifold and went for the larger one. There will be a version of it, hopefully in the Cambrian, and it also refers to the SBC phone book as well. So I think it'll be a great addition to our fire safety and emergency service safety in the community. The other two things that I wanted to mention here real quick are that we've been working a lot with the County Roads Department to try to make sure the storms didn't cause a lot of damage, and we were able to avert the proverbial bullet in the last storm, and Cayucas unfortunately got the brunt. They took more of a road than we did. I'll show you that in a few minutes in pictures here. And also I'd like to thank Captain Gallagher and our staff again. We are finalizing an application for $110,000 to the United States federal government for a federal fire act. Our local share will be somewhere between $4,000 and $6,000, and it will allow us to purchase equipment that we would be very hard-pressed to purchase ourselves, but equipment that's federally mandated, things like filling up our route in the road. We don't like being a traffic cone and being hit as your firefighters and emergency medical personnel. Next slide, please. You'd ask me to update you on the side. This is the second Great Burton Drive slide. We've had a couple more since then. You'll see the fourth Great Burton slide after this. The road was closed. We've worked with county roads. They've really done their best to try to loosen up a lot of that debris. That's already been trucked away, and more has come down behind it. Next slide. This is the fourth Great Cambria slide. You'll notice that we did not plant that sign on the left front there. It's actually been there all the time. And that's a small little tree that came down the hill, upright down there, kind of slid down, so Ninja Turtle style. So it the road's still closed right now. They've kind of opened it up so people can try to wander around. But if I was a betting person, I wouldn't drive by that. Some of those rocks coming down weigh a quarter of a ton, and you won't look the same when they hit your car. Next slide. This is a fatal accident that happened a couple weeks ago. It was outside of our area, but we were there for 4 hours extricating the body. This was a tractor-trailer truck that was trying to attempt a U-turn, thought they were on 46 East, and they were on 46 West, and the driver hit the truck at 60 miles an hour, never tapped the brakes. Next slide. And so it was a very long, it's a dark slide, but you can see that the vehicle in the front, the roof was crushed right down on the driver. And so again, we have a lot of people this time of year visiting with mobile homes. They're towing trailers. Be alert out on the roadway. There's a lot of deer migrating back and forth. The roads are slick. There's mudslides coming down all the time. Please slow down and just be alert to the conditions all the time. Sound like a CHP officer, but I mean, we don't like to do this kind of job. We hate to pull people's bodies out of cars. It's not one of our favorite pastimes. Next slide. This is Santa Rosa Creek after the last storm. It moved very well, and it moved out into the ocean. We were real happy for that. And fortunately, no Cambrians decided to launch the Cambrian Navy and get in that and had to be rescued. So we were very appreciative of the press we get from the local Cambrian and everybody else to stay out of these fast-moving waters when that because they are dangerous. They are killer. Next slide. I brought this slide in for two reasons. One is you can see how wide Santa Rosa Creek is at the mouth. And if you look up at the very top end up there, right up in this area here, it's right at the point. It's about 10 inches away from having enough mass and momentum to push through and go straight through to the ocean, as often Santa Rosa Creek does. Next slide. These are people that are down on the north side of the creek, but there was this many people down on the point north of where the Santa Rosa Creek makes the turn. With state parks and us, we went on out on loudspeakers and tried to get the people back. The reason I bring this up at this meeting is a lot of these people are visiting friends in Cambria and don't realize that Santa Rosa Creek, when it gets high, stops making a turn and goes out. They get caught on the sand island in the middle, and there's really no safe way for us to get them out. It puts us at great risk, so we have to wait till the water recedes. So we'd like to ask Cambrians, if they have visitors, tell them to stay off that area there, just off of Shamel Park, because Santa Rosa Creek may push through. Next slide. This is San Simeon Creek. It was the highest since I've been your fire chief that I've seen it here. It was literally bank to bank. Next slide. And you can see it also flooded some of the campgrounds, so they had to evacuate some of the campgrounds. So again, we ask people to watch. We hope that the wet season will slow down, and we hope that we won't have any more of these gully washers, but the ground is saturated, so watch for falling trees. Last picture is not a great one, but this is backup. It's about an eighth of a mile long from Cambria Drive, where there was a traffic accident here, I believe it was Wednesday or Thursday of this week, and tied up traffic. Again, it's not a great intersection. It's a bad intersection. People get real short-tempered at Cambria Drive and want to squirt out onto the Highway 1 traffic. It backs up, and we ended up blocking Cambria Drive at both ends and deferring traffic. And fortunately, we did it without another accident. But again, please slow down. It is wet. Look out for us when we're out on the roadway. We don't want CHP, the Department of Forestry, or any one of us to get hurt. So that's all I have, unless you have any questions.
Any questions of the fire chief?
Kind of.
Director Funky Blue.
You know, I was reading that paper about that fatal, I think that was Mr. Kelly, the
yes.
KVC reporter. And it was interesting that you were quoted in the paper several times. Even though that's technically not Cambria, is that correct?
That's correct. That's automatic aid for our fire department with CDF, County Fire.
So, I mean, that's kind of stuff that we do. And were you the first one out there?
Our engine was the first one on the scene, directly followed by the CDF County Fire engine. And I'm glad you brought that up. That's an important point. We respond automatic aid in the county about 40 times a year. The Department of Forestry and County Fire responds automatic aid in Cambria about 350 times a year. So I look at the few times we go out and help them as really paying back what they paid forward to us by responding automatically in Cambria, since their station is in the north end of town and they often beat us to calls. So often we are out in the community. You'll remember last year in the motorhome fire in San Simeon.
On traffic there. But I was curious because there was a San Luis Obispo County fire truck at that scene.
Right. The San Luis Obispo County Fire Department is CDF by contract. The County of San Luis Obispo, the Board of Supervisors, has a contract with the Department of Forestry, and the County of San Luis Obispo buys the safety equipment, buys all the equipment on the fire engine, buys the fire engine, and they use CDF personnel to staff them, and the county pays CDF to do that. So that county fire engine was there, is housed up on the up on the hill up above us here, off of Weymouth.
As long as I lived here, I've never noticed that.
Yeah, they're on almost all the calls with us. In fact, sometimes residents of Cambria will see them pull up first because they're physically closer.
Right. Any other questions of the fire chief? Chief, I have one. A member of the North Coast Ocean Rescue was speaking with me the other day and mentioned that he thinks they need what I think you call a Zodiac.
Yes.
Is that something that North Coast Ocean Rescue needs, in your opinion?
Yes. We right now as a team, obviously they fall under my purview in the fire department, the first and the second boat that North Coast Ocean Rescue had was completely purchased and funded with community donations. So we felt, and I felt it was wise, that starting in the end of November, for probably till the middle of this year, that we would seek private and non-for-profit organization donations, which we've been getting. And the idea is to retire one of our boats, which is getting to the point where it's not as dependable. And when we're out in rough water and our troops on that team are out there, we want them to be in the best that they can possibly be. Not that we need a Cadillac, but we can't get by with a Volkswagen that the engine doesn't always start. And that's what we're approaching with one of the boats. So it is something we need. What I have committed to and what I will come back to in the budget, next year's budget, is whatever money that we have not been able to gather locally and grant-wise, that I will put in my budget and we will fund to purchase the new boat so we can retire the old boat.
What kind of expense are we, total expense for the boat?
We're probably looking at about $10,500 for a turnkey boat and probably about $2,500 for a trailer. And that's if we don't buy a motor. I think the motor we have, we could get by for a while. But I think we have right now about $2,000 set aside that we've got in private and public donations. So all told, we may be looking at somewhere between $13,000 and $15,000. That's probably on the high side, but that's off the top of my head.
If it was the board's desire, would you even want to accelerate the purchase and not wait until the next budget cycle?
I think that so far what we've got from the community is a very strong, overwhelming support, and I feel comfortable that if we wait till then, we may have close to 75% or more of the money. One of the boats we have has a Lions Club sticker on it because last time they were one of the major contributors to help buy our rigid hull inflatable. I think this boat is neat for the community, and it's actually precedent-setting because probably by the time we buy it, we will be the first rescue organization in the Western Hemisphere to buy this boat. It was actually engineered in Australia and New Zealand, where they have a coastline very similar to us with the same kind of wave conditions. And they've actually turned boats over and injured people. So they have done almost 15 years of study, and they have bought this boat. We've talked to them both on the internet and in person. They were in Morro Bay last year. We went and actually met with them, and they said this boat's incredible and provides an incredible stable platform for rescue and gives the people inside rescue ability as well. And I think the community as a whole, some of the nonprofit groups, have supported that, and I believe they're going to make us donations. So I would like to try to get what we could out of the community and then in good faith approach you and ask you to budget for the rest of it, which I think is reasonable.
Sure. Well, you're the expert, and you have to establish priorities for your department. But my personal view, if we're going to encourage citizen volunteers to join North Coast Ocean Rescue and put their lives at risk, we have an obligation to provide them the best possible equipment. And I think you would probably find a receptive board when you bring that item back.
I knew I could count on you.
Right. Thank you. Any other questions?
I know why he wants the Australian Zodiacs. They have little, Foster's beer holders.
Yeah, right. Beer cans are dangerous in a boat. They cut hull. It's a fabric hull. We don't want that. Yeah, That's not a good thing.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. We'll next hear from the utilities manager, Brian Bode.
It's Foster's. Yeah, go ahead and flip that. Okay. Is it ready to go?
Technology, isn't it wonderful?
You gotta love it. They're full. They're actually even fuller than that right now. Next, San Simeon. Throughout the years, same thing. Next. And there's Santa Rosa, as full as it's ever been. So everything's full. We've got plenty of water right now. We're working on a few other things. We're working on digital imaging, and Kathy Choate will be buying a couple of high-speed scanners in the near future, if she hasn't already. And we haven't decided on which software we're going to go, imaging software, yet. We're still leaving that open, but we'd like to start at least scanning data and putting into a server, and Lonnie Rollins of Innovative Concept has been working with us for a server for that, so we'll keep up on that. I'll just comment on the East-West pipeline. Almost everything's in right now. Next week they'll be working on the Madison vault, and after that will be the vault down by the wastewater treatment plant. Most of the asphalt has been completed. There's a little bit on DeVault that has to be done. We've got to modify a sewer line in there, one of our force mains from a little tiny pump station down there. And also there's a lot of deterioration on the asphalt on DeVault that the county will be picking up, so they'll be paving just almost about half of that street, and that'll finish up the paving. On our solids dewatering project, paperwork's in the county right now for a minor use permit, and the first week of next month we'll find out whether everything went okay. We haven't heard any complaints or anything like that. And once the minor use permit is in hand, we have all the package together to send the bid packs out, change all the dates, and get those out immediately following that. So that'll be on its way. I've got one other item here on SCADA. We're still working on SCADA. Copy of the master plan back. This is a rough draft. It's still not finished. It's quite voluminous, but it's a good report. And but the way it's written right now is for basically a full master plan for the entire district, which would cost about $1.3 million, and we didn't have that in mind to start out. So we're going to have them take a look at phasing it so we can start with some of the software and some of the basic things and start building it up. But it's a really good plan. One of the interesting things we found out about it is that the radios that they'll be using will be able to read the water meters that we'll be putting in. So in any place that they can see the water meters or listen to the water meters, if you will, they'll be able to pick up readings on those without us even driving out. And with that, the automatic meter reading, the AMR system, and it is automatic meter reading, Bob, so I've got on item 7D, we've got a contract going out for maintenance to MVP meter maintenance contract for installing the meters. And we've selected them mainly because they can get it in one billing period, and we checked them out on places they've done before, and impeccable comebacks. So we're looking forward to having them in here. They're going to start the first week of May. They'll be in here, clean out meter boxes, and by the end of the second week, they'll start installing meters. And with that, I've got your water supervisor, Jim Adams, is going to give you a little demo on what the meters look like and what's going to go in.
Before he gives his demonstration, Brian, is there any way to test whether we will more accurately reflect the amount of water passing through the meters? I know the ultimate way is simply to change out the whole community, but you can't do that overnight.
Well, actually, that's what we're going to do. We're going to change out the whole community within one billing period.
Yeah.
So they'll all be brand new meters. All the residential will be in one billing period. They'll all be changed out. And the next billing period following, the readings will be very accurate, and they will probably be... for most people, it will be higher than they are in the past.
Can you...
Wait a second. Hold
on. Can you explain that? I think the people here in person and those who will see the tape will be interested to know the anomaly that we experience every month with pumping more water than we're actually billing for.
Yes. Well, the start of putting these new meters in is going to be the start of actually having a meter replacement program. The district's never had a meter replacement program. Only when a meter completely failed and fell apart, stopped working, would they actually replace them, or somebody complain about it, and we'd go out and check it and pull it out. 99% of the time or more, when we pull out a meter, the meters wear out, and when they wear out, they let water slide by them that doesn't get measured. And sometimes it could be over 30%. And some of these meters are over, 10, 20 years old. Most of them are 10 or 20 years old. And they're on that side where we're not measuring all the flow that goes through them. So to the district, that's a loss in revenue. And to the customer, they really don't know. They're really getting more water than they turbidity into your house. It can get in your water heater. If you had your washing machine on at the time, it will go into your washing machine and discolor your clothes. And it's just a thing that happens. The material is in all water systems like that. But when they did test the lines, we have to flow them. We have to flow the fire hydrants, and we have to flow a lot of water through there. And the water gets roiled up. It's highly turbid at times. A lot of iron and manganese in it that's settled in there over the years. And so it can have a nice red color to it, like rust. And the water is sterile. It's been disinfected. It's not hazardous to you. But it doesn't taste very well, and it tastes like a rusty nail, that type of thing, and it can discolor your clothes. But if it gets in your house like that, just flush it out and let it go. There's really no way that we can actually stop that from happening. We have to test the lines, and it's just one unfortunate annoyance of a water system.
But it does go away.
It goes away right, within hours.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Jim?
Jim Adams.
Brian, I was just talking to my colleague to my left, and we like rusty nails. Not a bad thing.
Right?
We direct it all to your house.
I just wanted to state, we have, being in the drought situation that we've been in through over the years, what Brian's saying is really correct. So we haven't been able to flush the water mains technically like we should be from Department of Health Services. And that's something we're going to try to implement in the near future. Years coming is get back on a routine program, at least in the wintertime, and more flushing with the fire department.
We've decided to do these presentations while Jim is getting set up, to make sure that we do enough public outreach and education about this meter replacement program. And it is typical in the industry to replace water meters about every 10 years. So once we put these in the ground, we will begin in the budget showing these meters getting replaced beginning in about 10 or 11 years.
First off, before I get to the overhead there, I'd like to talk about, Brian addressed the reason for doing this project, and it's fairly accurate. We've never had a meter replacement program. AMR, automated meter reading system, is, if you can put the meter and the transmitter on. It's basically the same meter that you have in your meter box now. The dial is going to be the same as the original Badger dials. The only difference is there's going to be a wire connected from the dial, which is the black part on top of the base, and it's connected to a transmitter, which is the black part over there. It looks, just a small black roll. This is the transmitter. What it does is sends an impulse from the dial through the wire telling the transmitter how much water it's used. It hits every tenth. There's on the dials, you'll see the tenth numbers going around the face of the dial, and every tenth it hits the transmitter, and the transmitter records it, so it's accurate down to the tenth. You can still manually read it down to the hundredth. After that, the transmitter relays the information as we're driving by with this laptop, which has an antenna mounted on the outside of the truck, which also has a GPS device. GPS is a global positioning device, which, as we drive, the map moves to where we're going. You see these... that's fine. I'm sort of moving faster than I intended to, but it is after 8 o'clock.
Much appreciated.
While he's setting that up, the meter and the transmitter will be in the same location as previously at your properties. It'll be in the same box. There'll be a brief interruption. There should be some advance notice to when the contractor comes along. And then the interruption should be less than a half an hour per device, per meter. As you see, this is an area that we've already done. We have approximately 144 or thereabouts we've installed ourselves to see how the system worked when we purchased the pilot program with the laptop. We have all the devices to read. We just don't have all the meters is where our next step is. All the blue triangles are existing meters. I haven't even started yet. But if I go to an old report, which, bear with me, I go to the reports, it's told me, we went out today and read, we attempted, our total meters we have out there are 134 that are on the system. Attempted meters were 89, and there's 45 that weren't read. And then I can go into the reports, I can go into a not read report and go back to the direct address and look up all their information, their last reads, or whatever. I can also go to the tamper report, which is an interesting part of this whole process, is when we're going out there, this program, this transmitter, is looking for no movement for a period of 1 hour in the last 24 hours. Now, if it sees movement for 24 hours in a row, it's assuming that something's wrong, that there's a potential leak. Means water's been used every hour for the last 24 hours. So if that's what it sees, then it will make a weird noise when we're driving by. It alerts us to the sense that, okay, this person may have a potential leak. So after we're done, we're not going to interrupt reading, but directly after that, we go back to billing, give them the disk, and they notify the customer immediately that there's a potential problem. It's a very handy tool. And she will print out a report that looks like this. We encountered one today. And it's a tamper report, but it'll indicate if I open it up with the details, you see in red it says leak. I'm trying not to leave it on the screen too long because there's personal information on there. Other tamper reports are, if people cut the wire, we'll know immediately when we read the meter that there's something wrong with it. The best thing about this, and the biggest advantage is if it's red, it's correct. If it's not, then there's something wrong. It's a correct read. So we're hopefully reducing customer complaints tenfold. It's more efficient for us to be able to respond to the customers more directly when there are issues. There's a lot of other tools on here, but that's just the basic.
It occurs to me, this is exciting.
It's very exciting.
But when you do, since you're out there in the street driving around and you discover a leak, it seems like it's a lot of wasted time to then finish your route, then go back to the office, and have the office then generate a report, and then get the report over to, I mean, that's a, you're wasting water that whole time. Couldn't we perhaps, like, maybe leave, like, a notice on the door of the customer that, you know, we've discovered a leak? That wouldn't be too work intensive. Is that reasonable?
That is reasonable. I mean, we can notify by radio for have the office contact them immediately. The process is going to take time to read. And once we get used to it, the driver getting the circulation motion down. I mean, 4,000 meters, we're hopefully we can read the whole town in one day. That's being optimistic in the beginning. I think it's going to take 2 days. And that goes back to the question that Mr. Sadner's created on the sense of how accurate, or one of the board members, how accurate is this in telling us how much of our water loss is. When we go through a billing cycle, they read meters over 4 days, 3 to 4 days. And then we have production. Our production's daily. So there, the consumption is there, and you compare billing with production, you have a few days there where there's water consumed that you can't count for because it doesn't carry over, if that makes sense. By us being able to read it in one day, we'll be able to compare apples with apples more accurately. So, but yeah, we can figure out a tool to be more efficient on that, definitely. Where did I go there? Another tool that we have. Are there any questions on any of this so far?
Not yet.
Another tool that we have is the Radex, Badger Radex handheld. And we purchased this along with the pilot program to get started. And it does basically the same thing as a laptop, but it's not designed to do it as fast from the car. It's more of a walk-around unit. And the reason we wanted to purchase this was if something happened to the laptop, we'd have a backup unit to read the meters. It does work from the vehicles, not as efficiently. And also, when we put these transmitters in, we can program them. It has an infrared or... the only problem there is, as we all know, is the mom's software. It's hard for it sometimes to be as flexible as the Badger software is, so...
And MOMS is an acronym. You're not referring to...
No. I couldn't tell you. Manage?
Yeah. Right.
It's Municipal Operations Management
okay.
System.
Thanks for helping me out.
You bet.
I could get more technical. I'm going to leave it at that. There's one thing that I wanted to bring up for the community and the board. How are we going to accomplish this? And what we're going to do is a divided... Well, that map's on the other.
Yes.
Yeah, you can switch it back to the other one.
Okay.
We're trying at the same time to clean up our routing that's been going on right now. It's quite confusing. It's scattered all over the place for the field personnel. So we're going to recreate routes. And at the same time that we're creating the routes... We're creating the zones that the company that's going to install the meters, they're going to come in. I broke it down into nine zones right now. And they're logical areas for the most part until you get to Lodge Hill, which is confusing for anybody. But Park Hill would be a zone. Happy Hill and Lemert would be a zone. Pine Knolls, and then Lodge Hills broke down. And the whole point of this is the transition. That's the other reason that we hired this company, is they're knowledgeable in how important it is for the numbers. The meters have numbers, as we all know. The transmitter has a more important number. If this number is wrong on the transmitter, it's not going to work. And this company knows how important that is. So they are going to take down all the data. And once we take a zone, say Marine Terrace, and they complete that, we inspect it, we accept it, it can go directly to billing, and they can move to another zone. And there shouldn't be any interruption except for periodics between the residents. So that's something we're trying to create to simplify also. And the last thing I'll get out of your hair so we can move on is, a couple things, I guess. And this is not to take any fire away from Patrick, but this is our first step in moving forward with the meter exchange program. And it's something we never had. It's quite the expense that we all No, it is, and we're fortunate to have the money to do it, and we're really excited that we could do it in the way we're doing it. But we have to plan for it. The life of the transmitters, there are batteries in here. They're guessing to be 13 years. The life of the Badger meter is approximately the same. So they go hand in hand. And it would save in labor if you did them both at the same time in the future. So we need to look at addressing a scheduled program for finances from 10 to 15 years. By breaking it down into areas, it gives us an opportunity to plan over a period of years instead of doing it all at once. We can take, you know, Route 1 and plan it for 10 years from now, and then Route 2 and 3 or something to that effect.
Funding depreciation is a global issue for us.
I believe I've heard it a few times, yeah.
Right.
We're serious.
Yeah. So I just wanted to bring that up, because if we do it now, it's great. If we don't follow through with it in the future, we'll have to, you know, readdress this whole issue all over again.
Right.
So. And the last thing I wanted to bring up is there's a device. Where did I put it here? I seem to have lost it. This unit here, I don't know what I did with it. Anyway, it's a water metering monitor that can also communicate directly with the transmitter that's in the meter box. It's about the size of a garage door opener, and it has a few different options on it. And I've lost my notes. It gives the customer the opportunity to monitor his own water. He can see his totalizer and what is used. They can set it for billing cycles or monthly cycles. There's a couple other options that give them, they can set it just before they water their lawn, and then they can check it to see how much water they've used on their lawn. And it's something that's pretty intriguing for us, and especially this community. Brian and I find it very interesting, and Badger's pretty excited about it. We're trying to get a couple samplers that we could try and maybe put on your house, Greg, and a couple others. Anyway,
President Sanders, excuse me.
It's fumbling all over the place. They run around $73 approximately, and it's just another good water.
How much are they?
Conservation device. $73.
Engineer's report is next, but I assume that you've covered everything in your earlier report.
I'm all talked out. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you. Then we'll hear from Patrick Bradley on the finances. Soon.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board.
Brevity is the buzzword tonight.
Bradley's the buzzword?
No, brevity. Brevity.
Oh, brevity, brevity.
So is Bradley, but brevity
is. So is Bradley. Bradley and brevity kind of go
absolutely
together. You have my report, and so what I'd like to do is jump right into the middle of it, and I know I'm starting to sound like somebody who doesn't have a life, because every time I stand up here, I talk about coverage ratio and a need for money. And that's one of the nifty things about working at the district is, I mean, when we need money, you got, like, Brian and Jim come up with these wonderful plans that give us a potential increased revenue, which we do need. I mean, we've got some options out here to raise and increase our revenue base, but we also have a pretty steep need. And we are, as you can tell in my report on the coverage ratio, we are not meeting our coverage ratios, which means, of course, our revenues in water and wastewater are not adequate. When we approved the budget, we approved it with reserves, and I know we have a number of options available to us. We got the Prop 50 money, we got the potential increased revenue here with the automated meter replacement program, and we've got some other things, but what my concern would be at this point is that because of the length in terms of getting some of these things in, I don't want to see us backed into the corner so much that we don't have any wiggle room because of the fact that our financial situation has dropped down so far. So I just am going to keep presenting that and bringing it up, which kind of then leads into the – did you have a comment, Senator?
I do. I think it would be very imprudent of the board to put our credit rating in jeopardy, particularly considering that in the not-too-distant future, we may have to do either a refinance of the existing debt or we may have to take on even further debt, depending upon how much some of the capital improvements we need are going to cost. And so what I'd like to have you do, Patrick, is prepare a summary of another summary of the deficits that we're running in the water and the wastewater funds, and what you think would be necessary in terms of a temporary surcharge on water bills in order to bring our coverage ratio up to what it should be, and present it to the Budget and Executive Committee for our next Budget Executive Committee meeting, and we can decide what to do with it from there.
Excellent. Wonderful. Thank you.
What is coverage ratio?
The coverage ratio is when the district borrows money, we promise to the people that are loaning us this money that we will maintain an excess of revenue over expense by a certain percentage, which is over and above our debt service. So in other words, we have a 110 coverage ratio. So whatever our debt service is in the water and wastewater funds, we have promised to our bondholders that we will maintain revenue over expense of at least 10% over our debt service, and we're not meeting that.
Right. And I say a temporary surcharge because there are, as we've discussed before, many moving parts, many variables to the financial picture. One of those moving parts is the ability to more accurately read the amount of water that passes through the meters so that we can bill for the water that is all of the water that is delivered to the ratepayers. We need to get a better handle on what some of the capital improvement costs are going to be, and we may affect further tightening of the budget and look for additional cost savings. But again, I think in all probability, a part of the short-term answer is going to have to be some sort of temporary surcharge so that we do meet the coverage ratios that we covenanted to meet when we entered into our bond indentures with the bondholders. So please get that information together, and the Budget and Executive Committee will review it.
I will do so. And again, I don't mean to stand up here sounding melodramatic, but I just need to present the facts as they are and where we are and what potential risks we do run.
It's a serious problem, and we need to address it.
And along with that, which then kind of leads me into the second component of my financial report, is, you know, there's two sides of the equation. You got the side where you want to raise revenue, which either you raise rates or whatever, but there's also money. Whether or not they will conveniently forget about it, I have no idea. I don't want to take that chance. I need to kind of reinitiate the contact that I had started with them, and I've kind of dropped it. And I guess I just am wanting you to know that I would feel more comfortable by starting that process again.
And this is the state loan that's related to the MTBE issue, correct?
That is correct. That is correct. And if I remember the terms of that loan, we were to pay that back, I believe, at reimbursement of our expenses, or i.e. the Chevron settlement, or 3 years, whichever comes first. I'm not exactly sure my particulars on it, but there definitely is some language in there that gives us that obligation. So I want to pursue that and try and work with them to see if they will allow us to hold it, because we do need to move SR4 at some point. That lease is coming up in 5 years, and perhaps they'll let us keep it, and we can use that money to move it.
I hope you can work something out, Patrick.
I do, too.
Director Copen?
Patrick, do you want us to take some action to help you move in that direction?
This is for the state loan?
Yeah.
What I would like to do is craft a letter and then run it through Bob and then perhaps bring it back to you for you to take a look at and just see if you're comfortable with it. And again, I don't mean to stand up here sounding melodramatic with it, but since it is an obligation, it's sitting on our accounting records as a liability to the state. And we all know, you know, the state, you know, how well you trust their efficiency in their accounting system, I have no idea, and I don't even want to get into that. But I think if we're somewhat proactive with it, at least then we've got ourselves covered. So that concludes my report.
Any questions of Patrick?
On the administrative savings, how much would you say the efforts of the staff has saved the district?
Right for the balance of this year, almost $25,000, $24,600, and for next year, it would be almost $60,000. And I really do want to compliment the staff at the administrative level because they have really stepped forward and making every effort because, you know, we've talked about the deficiency in water and wastewater, and although this is general fund money, it does have an indirect impact on it, and it's saving the district some money.
And one additional staff member was Monique Bedrid because she's doing payroll now.
That's
so
true.
She joined your team, so that was one name he didn't
That's
mention.
True.
That's
when
true.
I was there the other day, I spent a whole Friday afternoon plugging in payments.
That sounds exciting, Patrick.
actually, it isn't, but we have to do it.
I want to follow up on what's the adverse consequence of not meeting your coverage ratio? Give me what's the direct impact?
The most obvious one is if we try to borrow some money, we won't get it because the first thing they'll look at is, have you met your coverage ratios? And we haven't met them, so they won't even look at us. The second potential consequence could be that the insurer, because when we got the money, we insured it through a bond insurer, and it could very well be, and we give our financial statements to these folks, and it could very well be if they go through and start looking at analyzing this and discover that we haven't met our coverage ratio, potentially they could come back and force us to pay all the money back to them. I mean that's somewhat extreme, but that possibility could exist and does exist.
How long have we gone without meeting our coverage ratio?
Well, in wastewater, it's been, I just went back to the last two actual years, and we haven't met it since 2003, and I think even before that, we haven't. So that means, because we were talking about refinancing our 1995 debt and rolling in some additional funding for the Pine Knolls tank. If we were to try and do that, and submit this information, we would get denied the refinance because we haven't met our coverage ratio. If the people that are loaning the money and going through all of this analysis see a positive step on our side that we are doing something to meet our coverage ratio, then we've mitigated our potential liability there.
Yes. And you're going to get together the information we need to consider that?
I will.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Yes, roughly. Just. I know this might be impossible. How much money do we need to meet our coverage ratio? Can you give us a ballpark?
For the year that we're in right now, we would need in water $154,000 to meet our coverage ratio, and wastewater would be
$136,000.
And that's about 10%. Is that about 10%? Is that about 10%, Patrick?
That's about 10%.
It's about
10%.
Yeah.
Of the revenues.
Okay. So, again, you're going to put together some information for the budget and executive committee, and we'll take it from there.
I will.
Any other questions of Patrick? Thank you. I propose, board members, that we...
-2005, approving a maintenance contract with MVP... Repair Service Company for meter installation and maintenance. 7E, approved request for extension of intent to serve letter APN 022-123-003, San Luis Obispo County / Friends of Cambria Library. Item 7F, adopt resolution 22-2005, authorizing incorporation service level analysis and revenue neutrality payment project proposal with Management Partners, Inc.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent calendar. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Hearing none, motion carries.
Could I just...
please.
President, yeah, could I just have my name removed from approving the minutes of the January meeting?
Yes.
Present?
The record will so reflect. We'll now take a 10-minute break. Meeting will come back to order. Will the board members please take their seats at the dais? We'll now move to hearings and appeals, and the first item under hearings and appeals is the water surcharge appeal filed by the Old Santa Rosa Chapel. Is there a staff report?
Yes, there is. Is there a representative from the Santa Rosa Chapel here? We did get, and was distributed tonight by Vern Kalshen, this letter dated March 24th that he wanted, and it just says accept this letter's public comment that this item, he wasn't able to attend because of religious services at the Santa Rosa Church next door, and that the last sentence of the staff report prepared for this subject is suggested as follows. Therefore, it is reasonable that the board direct staff to research this issue. District records do not reflect an allocation for the cemetery, and determine if and what level of EDU allocation might be appropriate for the cemetery. It is requested that this suggestion by staff be adopted by the board, and that the appeal of the surcharge be continued to determine what the surcharge would have been based upon a possible change in allocation. I can present the entire report. I did want to make one comment to that suggestion. We haven't considered those types of ideas before when we brought surcharge relief requests to you. I made that as my number two recommendation because from the initial meeting I had with Father Gilbert and the young man who was at that time the caretaker for the property, the major reason for the water consumption was some lawn watering, and it was admitted at that meeting. There were a couple of burials, and I remember that. It's in my notes that you have with you. I did contact Father Gilbert, as you requested from the last meeting, to make sure that someone would be here. He thought that they would unless I heard otherwise. I did not hear otherwise until this letter got brought in this evening by Vern Kalshen. Just briefly, the fiscal impact is $625.06 and surcharge amounts for the July-August 2004 billing period. There was a reduction in their bill because they should have been billed at 450%, but that was during that faux pas of the billing system where I went back and for commercial accounts treated them the same as the residential accounts that got capped at 100%. So they actually did get a reduction in their bill, and they were only charged at the 100% surcharge tier. And then I give you a history of their water usage, which is relatively high in the summer months because of the lawn watering, and Father Gilbert did mention a couple of burials, but that would be very difficult for us to determine exactly how much water was used for those particular activities. So unless someone is here present, we are still going to stick by our original recommendation, and that is to deny the surcharge relief requested.
At the last board meeting, having continued the matter once before, and at the last twice before, and the last board meeting was the third time, we resolved that if the appellants were not present at this meeting, that we would consider the appeal without them. Board members, do you have any questions of the general manager?
I have questions regarding the thing generally. I think that we should proceed with the appeal.
Agreed, and I think we resolved to do that at the last board meeting.
I think it's ironic that the Santa Rosa Chapel of the Catholic Church brings this appeal on Holy Thursday. They plan it that way? Did they want to make us feel guilty?
Apparently so.
Well, I think.
Director Villeneuve?
No.
Did you have a comment?
No.
Okay. Are we ready for a motion?
I think there's something I'd like to bring up. I would move that we deny the appeal.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Any discussion on the motion? Director Coben?
No, I was just going to ask if we should include in this motion the second part. Do you want to do that?
I didn't hear that.
The question was asked of the maker of the motion whether we should include the second part of his discussion, which I assume means having some relief available to this appellant if they agree to use recycled water to water the lawn. Is that right?
No. The second thing is direct staff to further research the EDU. So, wherever that is. Nope.
Yeah.
Got another. Couple more tabs.
So, let's go back to the maker of the motion and sort this out. Director Chaldicott, would you simply move the recommended action? Would you agree to that?
I would move the recommended action and include in the second one the possibility of using recycled water.
Is that acceptable to the second?
Yes.
It's been moved and seconded to move the recommended action with the proviso that the church be encouraged to use recycled water. Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. The appeal is denied. The next item under hearings and appeals is a request to set a public hearing date of April 28th to adopt a resolution that will authorize a rate adjustment for Mission County Disposal Company. Is there a staff report?
There is. This is merely just the first step to schedule a public hearing for April 28th regular board meeting to present and discuss the proposed rate increase by Mission Country Disposal.
Mission Country.
And that's a 3.04% increase for single-family residential, multi-unit residential, and non-residential or the commercial industrial customers in Cambria. And we gave you all of the attachments that were provided to us from Tom Martin, and he is here present tonight, but this is merely just setting the hearing, and he will make a full-blown presentation next month.
So this will be set for the April 28th meeting, is that correct?
Yes.
Any questions of the general manager? Director Coben?
Just wanted to move the recommended action.
It's been moved to adopt the resolution. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Next item on the agenda is consideration of a resolution to amend the Cambria Community Services District contract, with the California Public Employees Retirement System to provide credit for unused sick leave. Is there a staff report?
Yes, there is. And this is the final action. It was brought to you last month that you approved. This was the action that was left out inadvertently from negotiations and negotiated contract with these employees, and we're just attempting to get caught up with it so that we can meet a retiring employee's date that allows that person to use their accumulated unused sick leave toward their retirement. We're recommending that the board president be allowed to sign the amendment to the contract, adopt the resolution 15-2005, which is the final adoption to the amended CCSD contract with CalPERS to provide the credit for unused sick leave for the miscellaneous group plan, and then the certification of final action of the governing body that's all attached to your staff report.
Any questions of the general manager? Is there a motion?
Now, wait a minute. Got to get it. Okay. I recommend that we authorize the board president to sign an amendment to a contract and adopt resolution 15-2005, final adoption of the amendment to Cambria Community Services District contract with California Public Employees Retirement System to provide the credit for unused sick leave for miscellaneous group plans, certification of final action of the government body.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to adopt the recommended action. Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hearing none, motion carries.
I hope it just survives the effort to cut back all this.
Agreed. Item D under hearings and appeals is consideration of a resolution declaring a public nuisance with the Cambria Community Services District 2005 Fire Hazard Fuel Reduction Program. Is there a staff report? Apparently
yes, and
so.
Chief Putney will give the brief staff report.
This adoption of
the point evening. I don't care if we're not.
Well, we're on a roll.
Motion carries. Item E. Director Sheldon.
I was going to ask the fire chief, this particular year, do you think that lot clearing is going to be a problem just with the abundance of grass?
I don't think we'll have any problems. I think we'll have some challenges. Okay. One of the things we've talked about is possibly extending the date by which lot owners have to clear their lots by 2 weeks, knowing that if people begin next month, they may have to clear their lots three times, and that would be unreasonable. So we are looking at alternative methods, and we've been talking to Patrick Bradley and the new program manager in the department that's going to be taking Kurt Hatton's place since he'll be retiring, to come up with a way that's more equitable for citizens and gives the property owners enough time to clear. So I don't think it'll be a problem. I just think some people may have to clear their lots a couple of times. We're going to try to accommodate that by pushing the dates back a little.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Any other
Could
questions?
Good question.
Chief?
Are you going to have the chippers coming around again?
We're going to do two chipping events this year. I need to make sure that we have California Conservation Corps support for those. Tentatively, we have scheduled, and I don't have the dates on the top of my head, I believe it's September and June, either May or June, for the chipping dates. And as soon as those are finalized, I'll announce those. We'll put them out in probably the CCSD flyer, and I'll mention them at the board meeting. We'll have our own chipper this year, so we'll be able to help. So that'll mean we can chip more parcels in those days. So that'll be a great benefit.
Well, I'm saving a whole lot of this stuff for you. So.
We figured you were. I saw the pile growing.
I was going to quote a great line from the movie Fargo, but I'll let that go.
That's disgusting.
Totally. No, I won't say it. All right. Any other questions of the chief?
You see what happens when we have these nightly meetings? We get a little,
okay.
You know.
Exactly. We're ready for item E under hearings and appeals.
Is to adopt resolution 17-2005 to schedule a public hearing to approve the water and wastewater standby or availability charges for fiscal year 2005-2006. This is annual, and all we're doing is setting the public hearings for May 26th and June 23rd at our regular board meetings.
Any questions of the general manager?
May I make a motion?
You may.
I'd like to move the recommendation in agenda item 8E.
It's been moved to adopt the recommended action.
Second.
Is there a second? There
second.
Is a second. Any discussion of the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. We'll now move on to the regular business portion of the agenda. And item 8A is consideration of a resolution authorizing Water Department budget amendment for Corollo Engineers for the desalination project services. District Engineer, Mr. Gressens.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. I've got a couple of changes I need to make to the staff report, but basically we're seeking additional authorization for Task Order 1 with Corollo Engineers. They are working on the 30% design update to the desalination plant. Task Order 1 was approved when the agreement was approved back on September 23, 2004, and that amount was $96,912. They have been working on some key tasks, including development of a work plan, coordinating with the Army Corps of Engineers, and doing the permitting that will lead to our geotechnical study. The work, particularly the permitting part of this, is fairly complicated. I was at a meeting this morning, and I need to request more than what I've asked for in this report, particularly for the Padre and Associates portion. There's two sub-consultants working for Corollo here. One is Fugro, and they're going to be doing the actual geotechnical investigation. The additional authorization we're seeking for the Fugro portion of the work is approximately $20,000, and that's to do a more thorough job on the approach to work, make sure we're catching all the fine points that we need to look at this collector well technology. The other part of this is the work by Padre and Associates, another sub-consultant to Corollo. They've been doing most of the permitting work. From my meeting this morning, there's a potential that we might have to complete a negative deck as opposed to a categorical exemption on this work, which does change the cost from about $5,000 closer to $20,000. Now, this was fairly late-breaking information.
Excuse me, Bob. There's a sidebar meeting going on over here. Can you please take it to another room? Thank you, Don.
As far as scheduling a special meeting to discuss the next task order, I think we could wait until the next regular board meeting on that item, so we could drop item two of the recommendations in this staff report. Task order two will be the actual detailed drilling operation and so forth. That'll be a fairly expensive task order, but that'll be at a future meeting. So with that said, I'd recommend we change the wording on item one for the adopt resolution 11-2005, authorize an increase of $40,000 to task order one, and then similarly change the item two of the resolution to $40,000 and just that ceiling for task order one. But I'd be glad to answer any questions if there are at this point.
Any questions of the district engineer? I have a couple of questions, Bob. District Council may want to chime in on this. What happens if we let this contract, and then subsequent to the letting of the contract, but before the work is completed, we sign the project cooperative agreement. Excuse me, the Corps of Engineers signs the project cooperative agreement. We've already signed it. All of a sudden, we've got a federal player in this project. Do we have to double back and comply with the National Environmental Policy Act in order to have a perfected environmental review process, or will our negative declaration carry us all the way through?
I'm going to defer that to Art.
Well, we're already dealing, despite the Army Corps not being currently involved with some federal jurisdictional issues because we're in the tidelands. And I believe that the instruction to our environmental people will be to consider compliance with NEPA at the same time, just to avoid that
very
particular
good
problem.
Okay. Second question, Bob. What is the timing of all of this? Let's assume the board authorizes the recommended action that you're seeking. How long will it take to do the geotechnical study? How long will it take until they're actually drilling the holes that are necessary in order to investigate the substrata of the beach area?
Okay. That has me concerned right now, and particularly with this meeting I had this morning, where I could see potentially being out there maybe in the fall, late summer, fall, where before I thought we could get this pulled together within a month or two to get the drilling started. It depends on the permitting process. The permitting process is really driving this. If we have to go through a negative deck on this, it's subject to an appeal process. There's a lot of things that can happen here that could push you back to drilling out there in late summer, fall. And we really need this information to make some good design decisions. So I'm concerned about it. That's why I'd like to keep particularly Padre's effort moving forward, even though we're going in parallel with this PCA with the feds on their portion of,
right,
of joining the project. But I think your point of the NEPA compliance is a good one, and I can certainly pass that on to the project team, make sure we're complying with that as well.
I assume that the property on which we will be doing this geotechnical investigation is under the control of State Parks?
Yes, State Parks would be signing or the right of entry permit for this work.
And we've interfaced with State Parks, and we have their cooperation?
Yes, they've been very helpful in attending meetings. They had, I think, at least four people at this morning's meeting, drove down from San Simeon and San Luis Obispo, providing some very good input to us.
And so the permitting process then involves us first going to the county for a minor use permit?
Yes, which we have done. We've gone to the county for a minor use permit, and we've also gone to the Coastal Commission for a coastal development permit because of the delineation of responsibilities being the mean high tide, right. And we're likely to be both sides of that line.
Right. So the commission has original jurisdiction over this as opposed to appeal jurisdiction?
That I'm not certain of. I'm not certain of the answer to that one.
Okay. I ask these questions only because this is a this concept that we're working on is the linchpin of the desalination project. It solves many problems if this technology that we hope to employ will work in the coastline.
Move the amended recommended action.
As amended by the district engineer.
Yes, thank
you. Is there
you.
A second to the motion?
Seconded.
It's been moved and seconded to adopt the amended recommended action. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. The next item on the agenda deals with the Cambria Community Center. There are two gentlemen who had to leave momentarily. They have submitted slips in order to speak to the issue. So since they're not back yet, we'll take up item C first and then double back and take up the community center item. Item C is consideration of a resolution approving the 2005 Community Services District Board of Directors bylaws. Is there a staff report?
Yes, and District Council is going to deliver it.
Honorable Chair and Board members, you have before you suggested revisions to the bylaws. As you remember from last meeting, the Board's policy is to consider these bylaws annually and make changes if necessary. You have in your packet a strike-delete format of the changes that are proposed for you, and some of them are just to make the bylaws a little clearer, but there are a few of substance which I attempted to list in my report. The first is the term of the office of the officer shall continue until a board member is replaced. That's a common type provision, so the term doesn't automatically end and nobody fills it. It's probably assumed that I put that in there to make it more specific. We also looked at, with input from board members, the necessity for roll call votes. There are no real legal requirements for that. It's a matter of procedure and also a courtesy for the clerk who has to record the votes to do that on different things, but we made it discretionary. And we also set forth the format within which the roll should be called in those situations, and that is the maker of the motion would be called first with the second, the next one in order, until the last person, which would be the president. We made it specific that the president could shorten time given to each of the speakers on a particular item, and that's as a matter of making the meeting proceed more efficiently. And I made the suggestion these bylaws specifically be identified as guidelines, so someone couldn't come back later and say that the strict compliance with the guidelines somehow invalidated the decisions made by this board. As I stated before, the rest of the changes are ministerial in nature, and I stand ready to respond to any of your questions regarding them.
Any questions of District Council?
I have a comment. Just three changes where that you've taken his and her out. There are a couple more I found. Do you want those now or just do
sure.
it later? On page 3-2. Well, that one, let's see, 1, 2, 3, the fourth line down. Unless other directed by the president, I would think it should, members of the public should be added.
Okay.
And on page 5, item 6, second line, there's a his, her, could be changed to there. And I had one other one. Hold on. There it is. Page 7, item 8, second line down, as compensation for each meeting that they attend, and take ED off. Thanks.
Any other questions or comments?
Yes, Dr. item 8-1 should be $1,000.
Yeah, we can't pay you what you're worth. We can only pay you what the statute allows.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Good try.
Director Sheldon.
Yeah, I wondered if under the was it page 8 at the top there about the per diem rates, whether those should be changed or whether they're, are they tied to anything in particular?
They just have to be reasonable in nature and not any more than what you actually submit receipts for. We could...
is there a motion?
I'd like to move the recommended action agenda item 9C with the modifications proposed by the directors at this hearing.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to adopt the recommended action as modified. Any discussion of the motion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. We'll now move back to item B under regular business, which is consideration of a memorandum of understanding with the Cambria Community Center for the purpose of providing recreational opportunities to the residents of Cambria. And this item was carried over from the February meeting.
Mr. President, may I? Since the last time this item was on our agenda, I've had a chance to talk to our legal counsel, and I'd like to recuse myself from this item, please. Does that mean I have to go out and stand in the cold?
You can...
stand in the bathroom. Go to the bathroom.
The rules require that you leave the room. But
what a choices.
She can go sit in the bathroom.
Right? Actually, the rules now have been changed. That you have to actually leave the room.
I'll take the cold.
Okay.
There's another room over here. I mean, it's not much of a room, but it's a room. Yeah. Can we get her a chair?
Chair. Yeah. Somebody might want to get her a chair. This may take some time. Here we go. Is there a staff report on this item?
Yes, there is. Okay. We have a few recommendations, starting off with those. There's a Resolution 03-2005 authorizing an MOU between the district and the Cambria Community Center for the purpose of providing recreational opportunities to the residents of Cambria by providing $50,000 toward budgeted community events and fundraising activities for the fiscal years 2004 through 2006. That's a little bit different from the last recommendation in that we specified this chunk of their budget and community events and fundraising activities toward which these funds could be spent. Item number 2 is new, to consider appointment of a board member, a PROS commissioner, or an interested community member to the Community Center Board of Directors, even in an ex officio capacity, for a purpose of representing the CCSD's interest. And the recommendation 3 is to direct staff to provide a report to the CCSD board regarding the status of the community center and its financial condition in 6 months, or at the September 22, 2005 board meeting. The fiscal impact is that this would be a 2-year commitment from the general fund, or $50,000, which is already budgeted back in December when we presented the budget amendment or a budget review for both of the fiscal budget years, 2004-2005 and 2005-2006. So that's $50,000 for each of those years. Each of those years, Patrick Bradley, our finance officer, has projected a surplus. And the easiest way to say this is that those surpluses he gave for fiscal year 04-05 was about $9,800, and for 05-06 was $34,000, included both of these years having this community center item in the budget. So that's after, even including this $50,000, there's still a surplus in the general funds. The $5,000 for Concerts by the Sea already exist in our district parks and recreation budget for fiscal year 2004-2006. I'm just able, as part of this action, to finagle that out of our office and over to the community center for administration, which would be nice. It gets it off of staff, and they have a good group of volunteers to work with them. And then the staff and the committee appointed by the district board of directors are working on identifying fees and a stable funding source that can be allocated for future support, and they anticipate a progress report at the April 28th district board meeting. I repeated our Parks and Recreation Department highlights. I'm not going to go over those again. I attached the draft MOU with strike-throughs that are different from the one that was initially presented. There are budgets, and actually it's an 18-month budget that was provided to me for incorporation with this report and consideration tonight by the Community Center Board. It is an approved budget. They did it this past Monday. We have, with this funding, the Community Center is well aware that they're encouraged to find ways to enhance their current levels of fundraising efforts. It is specifically, again, the action is to identify these funds, if approved tonight, to their budgeted community events and fundraising activities. And I actually specified them, or I didn't, the director for the Community Center did, in her attached annual income and expense statement. There's such events like Chalk Art Festival, the Kidorama, the Teen Dorado, the 4th of July event, Birdies and Bogies, the Country Coast Classic, Nations, and the listed community events and fundraisers assist with funding recreational opportunities in Cambria. And there are fees that are collected for their special programs offered in scheduled community recreation programs. There is an updated report or a new report dated March 1st from their board of directors, and it provides a detailed explanation of the Community Center community events, fundraising activities, and the recreational programs and the funding nature of each one of those. Having an interested board, PROS commissioner, or community member on the board for the Community Center might be useful, even if it is an ex officio or a non-voting capacity. The Community Center is able to amend their bylaws in order to accommodate such a position. Therefore, in order to provide some CCSD input and oversight, this is a viable option for the district board to consider. And then I thought it might be best just to provide a status report in that six-month time frame just to discuss how things are going, to ensure that the funds are being spent in the way they needed to be, and to make sure the board is aware of what's going on with that level of funding that might be provided. One last follow-up issue is that Patrick Bradley did talk with a financial consultant of the community centers just to receive some feedback concerning their financial condition, and that person did state to Patrick that they weren't aware of any other pending obligations, such as any personnel matters or, you know, known lawsuits at the time against the community center, just so we wanted to make sure that was clear and that we did do some more research as has previously been requested or suggested. And that concludes the report. And Wendy Sheridan is here from the Community Center tonight if there's any specific questions regarding their operations.
Any questions of the general manager? We have some requests to speak from members of the public.
Can I ask, I have some questions to Mr. Bradley and Ms. Sheridan. Should I do that after the comments, Mr. President, or before?
Why don't you ask them now so that we can get all of these issues out on the table for the benefit of those who are going to speak from the microphone.
Patrick, I know you didn't want us to be melodramatic, but I felt melodramatic when you were talking about the coverage ratio issues and the and the risk we take should we want to borrow in the future, and the future could be as soon as this year or next year. This surplus that the general manager noted in the agenda, if we were to take this money, this $50,000 or $100,000, and move it to cover the coverage ratio, would that be seen by the lenders as a good faith effort to meet our obligations?
No, it would not, because the coverage ratio is fund driven, and you're looking at enterprise funds, water and wastewater, and when you borrow money, you are essentially promising to the bondholders that you will raise money within these two funds and generate enough money to pay your debt out of the expense. And once you've got your revenue less the expenses out of each fund, so they're individually contained. So general fund should not be a part of this mix.
Great. And then the other question I had for Ms. Sheridan, is she here?
Good evening, Wendy.
Let's put it this way. Director Funkybleu, I would not recommend at all mixing general fund with the enterprise funds.
I understand. Hi.
Hi.
I'm looking at the budget that was provided by our staff. Yesterday I received it. And I'm looking on page 2.
Are you looking at the 18-month budget?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Page 2 of the January 2005 through June 2006 budget. And if I can ask you to look down near the bottom, it shows tax liability of $15,000. Can you tell me what that is all about?
The tax liability is back payroll taxes that we currently owe, and we're working with the IRS, and they will be paid off based on income over and above what we project for fundraisers that meet our expenses.
Now, these payroll...
fundraisers and donations that meet our expenses.
Okay, so this is...
This is the debt we're carrying. It's a debt that we're carrying.
And when did the debt first arise?
Last year.
The reason why I ask is I looked in the 2004 entire year, January through December 2004 profit and loss statement that was provided to me by your treasurer.
Why the debt doesn't show on there, I don't know.
Well, the only thing it shows is if you look in the October-December profit and loss, which are actual numbers given by your treasurer at the time, it shows that there's a negative payroll taxes, wages, and workers' compensation, and it's in the October through December 4 portion of the profit and loss statement of the community center for 2004. Do you concede that?
It's showing a negative. It's showing.
Yeah, I can show it to you.
I concede that there was a negative, that we've been carrying the negative, yes.
Okay. And it started in would you concede it started in October through December of 2004? I mean, that's what it looks like to me. I highlighted it there.
How much is that figure?
8,000?
Yes.
Something like that?
The figure here?
Yeah.
It's $2,336.36.
Yeah, but there's like three figures on there.
Oh, the payroll taxes, wages, and workers' comp.
Right.
Well, I concede that we've been carrying this debt since last year, yes.
Right. Okay. So can I conclude that the $15,000 that you owe Uncle Sam has as its source the negative that was generated in October through December 2004? Is that connected?
Yes.
Okay.
You're talking about the $15,000 reflected on page 2 of the budget.
Right. She just explained to me, and that's what I thought. I just wanted confirmation.
The $15,000 payroll liability is payroll taxes that were not paid last year and that we still owe.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. And then just below that, ma'am, there is a credit card debt of, my eyes are getting bad, $18,000.
Yes.
What is that?
The credit card debt is the debt that we have incurred since we opened the new building in July of 2003. We did not have a reserve. I was directed by the board to use the credit card to buy furniture, to get us up and running, to do what we needed to do. The credit card is currently at a zero balance on is carrying a zero interest. We're not paying interest on it, and it will be paid off by the end of this year.
Wait, I thought it was a zero balance.
It's zero interest.
Oh, zero interest. Oh, okay. Okay, and then if I can ask you to look at the first page of the budget item, it shows a total income from January 2005 through June 2006 of $379,040. Is that true?
That's what I'm projecting. This is January 2005 through June 2006 budget.
Right.
That's what I'm projecting is that level of income, yes.
And that $379,000 includes the $100,000 that you anticipate CCSD to give you. Is that correct?
Yes.
So if you were to take that $100,000 away, you still would be projecting $279,040 as your total income from January 2005 through June 2006. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you're telling us you can't survive on that kind of money?
I'm telling you that we cannot survive on that amount of money doing the level of programming that we're currently doing. We're not just talking about an after-school program Monday through Friday from 3:30 to 5:30, and occasionally and 4 hours on Saturday afternoons. We're talking about day camps for children. We're talking about programs like the dances that we've been having, where we have 40 kids or 50 high school kids at a time. We're talking about our Tot Time program. We're talking about all the community events that you see listed in the projected budget. So the answer to your question is yes. In order to survive doing the level of programming that we currently project in this budget, we need that amount of money. If we don't have that amount of money, and if the directors tonight don't approve this MOU, then the Board of Directors of the Community Center will have to rethink what the Community Center does and how it serves the community.
How many members are there on the Community Center Board of Directors right now? I'm sorry. How many members, how many individual directors are there on your board right now as we speak?
We just voted two new members on, so I have to count. There are 9 or 10. I would have to.
How many board
members? Additional surpluses because of our recent administrative vacancy. So that $9,000 for this year is actually a little bit higher, as he previously reported, and I think it was $34,000 earlier. We have had our assistant fire chief vacancy since our previous employee vacated that position. It's vacant, and those funds are sitting there, and that's probably about $50,000. Now, I'm relying on memory, but I would just say that that's probably what's still sitting in the budget for that position. And then there are some incorporation study funds. Even after the item you approved tonight for management partners to do some work, that's probably hovering around $35,000 that we will not spend by the end of this year. Patrick, if I'm speaking out of turn, please correct me. But those are other additional what I anticipate that may be surpluses by the end of this fiscal year, June 30th.
Any other questions of the staff? We'll open up the item to public comments. The first request to speak form is from Diane Brooke.
Diane Brooke, Cambria resident. It's really hard for me to make comment on this, but I will try to keep my composure. First of all, I think the CCSD and the public should absolutely support youth in our community, be it means of an after-school teen center, be it collaborating with the school district and the working on the fields, creating parks for our children to play on. Absolutely, I think we should, and I believe that it sounds like we can find funds to support the youth of our program. I would say, looking through the notes and the MOUs and everything that we got here tonight at the meeting, It did mention in there something about the community center following the advice of the focus group, which they themselves appointed. And two of the items, which I don't believe have ever been mentioned in public anyway, have been the call by the focus group to have a new board, overhaul the board. And the other thing was what Tammy actually just mentioned about having an audit. And it seems like that would be a prudent action to take, to have an audit before handing over this type of responsibility. The other thing is that I want to remind people, having worked with this group of our citizenry, mainly middle schoolers and high schoolers, particularly the middle schoolers are your constituents that need the most attention in this town. They're also the ones that are getting, you know, starting to get at a younger and younger age into more trouble, and so we really need to address their needs. And, you know, actually for years we've been trying to figure out ways to get to them, and I think we need whoever needs to evaluate their approach to doing that. Also, I think it would be a prudent use of public funds to, you know, nothing against anybody in particular, but I was not a recreational professional, but I think that it would be a good idea to have somebody in charge who is actually a recreation professional, who is aware of granting and aware of types of programs and aware of how to really read a community for what their recreational needs are. I don't know that that has, you know, yeah, I had a great rapport with the kids, and I knew a lot of people in town, and that was why I was originally hired as the director to create this program. So, but I think that you may be better served with a professional recreation professional. And finally, I probably just need to call it to their attention, but I still never received my last paycheck, so that is still something that's pending. So that's all.
Thank you. Next speaker will be Richard Hawley.
My name's Richard Hawley. I'm a resident of Cambria. And I'm not here to either support or not support the merits of the community center, but I am here to talk about the procedure that the CCSD has gone through to potentially give $100,000 away to a nonprofit. And I would like the board to consider having some type of a protocol where we have the other groups in town who do public benefit work can have a chance to access this money. And I think maybe legally you really can't just give money away to a nonprofit without having some type of a protocol. There's a lot of public benefit that goes into, say, forest management that affects everybody in town. Maybe that might be.
Hi, my name is Lisa Anthony, and I'm here as a citizen. I have kids in this town, and I've worked with kids for quite a long time. I sit on the board of the Cambria Coalition for Youth, and we have recently been associated with the community center. And I noticed that I had some questions about the budget, and I don't really know who to direct them to, but who is Friends of the Community Center? Does anybody know that there's a organization that is, I have never heard of them. So, and then another question I had was,
let's take your questions one at a time. Tammy, are you?
I'd have to defer to Wendy Sheridan.
Wendy, can you step up here and to the microphone, please, and answer the question she has? Thank you.
Friends of the Community Center is the title we've given to our annual campaign drive. It's Friends of the Community Center / annual campaign. So it's our annual fundraising drive where we send out a letter and ask for donations.
Okay,
my next question is, it looks like the Cambria Coalition for Youth is under their youth programs, activities programs, and the Community Center did act as our fiduciary agent for us, but we are a separate entity, and I think there's some confusion and has been over quite some time as differentiating between the two groups. And I also see there's Friday Night Live and Club Live listed as their activities, and the coalition has spearheaded that program and worked 5 years to get that program up and starting at the high school. I've written grants for that program that have gone to the coalition, and so I guess I'm a little confused why they're showing activities that the coalition is supporting and why our funds are appearing as part of their budget as an expense. So,
Wendy, can you respond to those two issues?
Those two line items are restricted accounts per an agreement with the Cambria Coalition for Youth Board of Directors, and I can't comment on it. I can't comment on it any further than that.
Are you precluded from commenting by the terms of the agreement?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I just want to say that, you know, I was originally approached by the Community Center Board to discuss issues that the focus group had brought to attention of the board, of the Community Center Board. And those issues were to have a review of the budgets and then also really look at getting new board members. And I think that we really need to look at the structure of the board that they have and see who is on that board and does it represent a cross-section of people. I know that the recommendation from the focus group was that the coalition be looked at as an agency that would, or an organization that would be appropriate to be on that board, and we're just, it seems like it's not happening. The focus group recommendations are really not being answered. So.
Okay. Thank you. Oh, you may.
In regard to the focus group report, I would like to say here that I initiated the focus group. I pushed through getting the focus group so that we could have a look at our finances, at the way we ran, the board ran, was structured, the procedures of the center, so that we could have a conversation similar to what we're having now, but so that we could start to fix the things that needed to be fixed so that we could grow and expand into the kind of organization that could serve this community on a wider basis and be a support for other organizations and for all of the youth and the youth groups in the community. Those things are beginning to happen. We are meeting with CYAA. Audrey Peters, our new youth activities coordinator, is already working closely with Dennis DeClercq at the middle school and with the high school. She's gone, visited both schools already several times. We are focusing on the middle school programming in order to accomplish some of the things that we think are most important for that age group. As far as the focus group report goes, the focus group recommended, excuse me, I could use some water. The focus group recommended that we look at getting a new board. We have been working to get a new board. We invited coalition members to sit on our board. Bob Watt, a member of the coalition, was sitting on our board for a while. He resigned, has told me time and again that she doesn't believe that we need to have a formal audit because we're not that large of an organization. I firmly believe we do. I've felt that since I took the job. And so that is something that I would welcome. As far as I will admit, I am not a recreation professional. I am a credentialed teacher. I taught kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade, and eighth grade. I taught for 15 years. I worked for the YMCA for 10 years as a camp director at the YMCA Family Camp and Youth Camp Program. I ran YBA, MBA programs with the National Basketball Association and the YMCA for 3 years. I ran their day camp and at the YMCA in the Central Valley, Fresno Central Valley YMCA, for 3 years before going up to their camp in the mountains. So although I am not I don't have a degree in recreation. I have lots of experience in it. This has been a tough 2 years for the center. Change is difficult. I think that a lot of what's happened is about me and my personality, and I think that's unfortunate. And I hope that the decision to do good things for the children of Cambria and their families in this community, and if you look at our budget and the projections of the kinds of activities that we're going to do, you can see the breadth of activities that we offer and that we will continue to offer. So I know that there are a lot of hard feelings about this issue, but I am determined. I have been determined. I didn't stay with this job by myself since last September through the beginning of this year through February, being the only employee, keeping the teen center open, working to keep the center open because I didn't think it was worth it. So I appreciate your time. I appreciate your listening to me. And if there's any other questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Stand by. There may be more questions. You can sit down in the meantime, Wendy. I don't mean to have you stand up there the entire time. We'll now hear from Jerry McKinnon.
Oops. Sorry about that. Okay. Jerry McKinnon. I find some inconsistencies that I would like to have cleared up just for my own information. Maybe it'll mean something to you as well. On the back of the back page, Cambria Community Services District, where you have your resolution, on the back of that page, date March 1, 2005, to the Board of Directors, from the Board of Directors. Down at the bottom, it states that community events which require capital expense, and it has a list of five of them there, community services that generate some funds that are not...
Jerry, I lost you. Can you just show me where you're reading?
Okay. Here's the back page.
Uh-huh.
Turn it over.
Okay, I got it.
Okay. All right. Where it states that community events which require capital expense, it seems to me all they're asking for is seed money. If they want to put on an event, they have to have some capital to work with in the beginning. Now, when I look at the page, the Community Center of Cambria Community Events, annual income and expense, it appears as though Birdies and Bogeys needed $7,000 to put on their golf tournament, but they made $5,000 net. The same way with the Honorary Mayor's Contest. They needed $5,000, but they actually made $15,000. So there's really no seed money necessary for those unless they spend that money and don't hold it over for next year. When I look at the community services that generate some funds but are not self-supporting, when I look at that page, Teen Dorado made $1,000. So that sounds to me like that's self-supporting. Kidorama made $500. That sounds to me it's self-supporting. Chalk Art, $300. And now the 4th of July crafts booth. This is where I've got to put on my American Legion hat. As long as we've had the 4th of July, as long as the American Legion has been sponsoring the 4th of July, there has been a youth center booth. Each year, the youth center booth turns over its, when all they're looking for is seed money, dole out the seed money as needed, and hold on to that other as conscience dictates. Thank you.
Wendy, rather than have you come up piecemeal, let's just keep these issues until the end, and we'll have you come up and respond to all of them. The next speaker is Doreen Minnick.
Doreen Minnick, Cambria. In the past, I've been involved with several organizations in Cambria. I was coordinator for Cambria Anonymous Neighbors for several years. the Community Council, and the Learning Center. All these organizations have very good track records, and they all work with volunteers. CAN has no employees, the Community Council has one part-time bus dispatcher, and the Learning Center has one part-time, minimally paid coordinator. In the past, the Youth Center ran the same way. The Community Council and the Lions Club is what supported the Youth Center, and all the other people were volunteers. I agree completely with Mr. Hawley that you're setting a precedence here. The Community Council was formed probably over 50 years ago to fund the nonprofit organizations in Cambria. They have a fundraiser every year. Besides running the community bus, they grant funds to nonprofit 501c3 corporations only. And I think that that's how the youth center, the community center, should run, is by volunteers. I have some questions with their budget. A budget is only a projection. Has the board received a profit and loss statement and a balance sheet from the community center?
No, ma'am.
How can you go by a budget only? This is only a projection if you don't know what they've done in the past. Where's the balance sheet that shows their assets, their liabilities, and their capital? Where's their former profit and loss from last year? What did they actually spend? How can you set up a budget projecting if you don't know what you had in the past? A budget is normally done because of what you've done in the previous year, so you know what you need in the future year. That's what I'd like to see. My other comment is this tax liability. In my opinion, it's very irresponsible of a board to continue having an employee if you can't pay the payroll taxes. Not only is it the Medicare and Social Security and your SDI, if they're deducting funds for FUT and SUT, that's federal and state withholding, that should be deposited with a federal deposit, they're not only taking the portion that they owe, they're taking the portion that that employee is giving their portion to the government to be withheld from their wages, and they're not depositing that. To me, that's very irresponsible. No business could run that way. If you can't afford employees, then you don't have employees. And with talking about increasing our water bills, a surcharge, you're hitting everyone in the community. Our low-income seniors, our low-income Hispanic community. I would like to know how many children are served, or adults, at the community center, and how does that break down per person for their profit and loss, or even, you know, their budget, so that we know where this money is going and how much per person. I feel that this money should be set aside for our emergencies so that it isn't just given to the small portion that may be attending activities at the community center. And don't penalize the rest of the community that doesn't go there by increasing a surcharge. Thank you.
Thank you. The next speaker will be Galen Rathbun.
Galen Rathbun. I'm here representing the Cambria Forest Committee. I don't want to add a lot of words to what's already been said. Rick Hawley and a lady that preceded me had excellent points. I'd like to point out that I stood before you, the board, 2 years ago and presented the Cambria Forest Management Plan, and the emphasis of that presentation to you was that there are a lot of safety issues regarding our forest. And in the last couple of years, I don't think the CCSD has spent a dime on these safety issues outside of the fire department.
This evening, because she's attending her grandson's second birthday tomorrow, she states, A well-run, user-friendly community center that provides recreation to a significant percentage of teen and preteens, as well as providing educational and social activities for adults and younger children, would be a tremendous asset to Cambria. We aren't there yet. And I don't believe that committing public funds, if that is all that changes, will give us the vital recreational hub our community wants and needs. According to the complete focus report, group report given to the Community Center Board last summer, past bookkeeping practices have pointed to the need for an audit and new accounting procedures. Subsequently, Center Board members and staff have said that mistakes have been made. It would seem to me that as prudent stewards of public funds, CCSD directors and staff would not want to invest more public dollars without knowing these practices and procedures had been addressed and those mistakes had been remedied. The community center needs to attract more people to its programs. It has a poor track record of participation. This is unfortunate because there are many in Cambria who could benefit from the programs that could be offered at the center. We have all seen the beautiful brochures that were sent out to Cambria residents. Of those recreation offerings, how many were actually implemented and how many people were served? Lack of participation may be the result of any number of causes. Has the staff taken steps to understand and analyze why programs were not well attended? Has the staff taken steps to discover the unmet needs of the community? I hope that CCSD directors and staff would not invest more public dollars without knowing the answers to these questions. Finally, the Cambria Community Center must be viewed as an organization that is not moved beyond operating in a crisis mode. In order for the center to become strong, it needs the benefit of the very best planning, management, and oversight. This would require a strong and involved board, staff who are well acquainted with their target clientele, and leadership experienced in the step-by-step process of building a program without overextending its reach. I know that the center has recently begun making changes in the board and staff. I would hope that CCSD directors and staff would know the qualifications and visions of those involved, as well as the proposed budget, before granting a request for more public dollars.
Can you summarize, please?
Yes, this is the final paragraph.
Great.
A well-run, user-friendly community center that provides recreation to a significant percentage of teens and preteens, as well as providing educational and social activities for adults and younger children, is not the impossible dream for Cambria. But the difference between what now exists and the center we can envision is simply not a matter of money. I urge that you be certain the required safeguards of appropriate practices, oversights, planning, and management are part of any agreement made on behalf of Cambria residents.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And the last speaker is Nancy McCarney.
Thank you, Mr. President. Nancy McCarney, and I am a Cambria resident. I hadn't planned on speaking tonight because I didn't think I'd have to. I'm just got some bullet points in answer to, or at least what I feel in response to what some things were said. Questions, where is the money going? I think it's clearly outlined in the proposal that it's going to be tracked and controlled. I think that the audits, the proposal itself says that the audits are in place so that those monies are not going to be used capriciously. They will be followed, and reports will come back to the board to know that it's been used properly. These are a little out of order, so forgive me. I'd like to point out that the last meeting we had 14 people come up in support of helping to fund the community center to get it back on its feet because of the tough couple of years that they've had. At this meeting, we've had 2 to 4 against. I say 2 to 4 because most of the people who came up here, or a couple of them came up here, were definitely in support of our youth and doing programs for our youth.
But I honestly feel due to personality conflicts, they decided that the community center is not the place where you do that. You don't have youth activities there, and that they are the only ones qualified to make those decisions. I was really disappointed in the fact that those issues were brought up and spoken against the community center. Let's see. We've got personality conflicts and egos here that I think are making some of these statements. And
does somebody want to bring up the specific things? Do the directors have questions in regard to those?
And any questions of Wendy Sheridan?
Nope.
Director Chalmers? I think, no. I guess the only thing I would say is that we are not an organization like CAN. In fact, CAN is an organization that meets at our building, has their regular meetings at our building, one of the many. And that there have been so many changes, and I think for the better, that it has created some negative feeling, and I feel that that is an issue, and it's made my job more difficult, and it's made succeeding more difficult. So I would like to respond to him. I haven't been taking notes, so if somebody wants to refresh my memory about some of the questions, I will answer them.
Was there any particular question that anyone would like to have answered while Wendy's here? Apparently not.
I just think I addressed the issue about the coalition, and I repeat once again that we have invited coalition members. I expect to have coalition members sitting on our board. We actually are a member of the coalition ourselves, so that's kind of an odd thing.
The coalition sued you. How can you say that?
Should be brought up here.
There's a settlement.
Funky Baloo.
There's a settlement between the coalition and the community center. Apparently, Wendy is not at liberty.
I'm not at liberty to discuss it. I will say that the main thing I think that came up and somebody had a question about was the irregularities in that were brought up by the focus group, financial irregularities. And what I would say to that is that those were in regard to those were in regard to bank accounts that were in place before I was hired and involved coalition monies and the community center. And that's all I can say about that, and that's part of what was involved in this suit and the mediation. Okay. So, but all that happened before I came, and that's one of the things I've been trying to straighten out. So,
okay.
If there's any other questions, I'll be happy to answer.
Thank you, Wendy.
Can I answer one of the questions?
Sure.
Diane, come up.
Diane Brooke again. Just because I have so many emotions right now going on. One thing about volunteers in this kind of an organization, when I was running the program, if you mentioned middle school and high school students, people wouldn't come near it with a 10-foot pole. So I just want to point that out to the general public that, you know, it's a lot easier to have, you know, 40 volunteers to come and work with cute little grammar school kids, but as soon as you address the issue of middle school and high school kids, it's very difficult. I still think there's an issue with managing money and stuff, but the whole thing about running on volunteers, we know that that doesn't work very well. It just, we need to find a balance, but I just wanted to let you know that I can't tell you how many people used to tell me that they were afraid of the high schoolers or the middle schoolers. I guess they're just a bunch of big stinky kids, you know, so. But so I just wanted to point that out, too, that that is an issue.
Thank you. Thank you. That concludes the public comments.
May I read one public comment into the record that
Sure.
was handed to me by James Ellman, our chair, our pros commission chair. He wasn't able to stay for the entire meeting, so he wanted me to read this into the record. Since its inception, funding of the community center has been routinely discussed at PRO's regular monthly meetings. As a consequence of these discussions and with the evolution of the community center, PRO's determined that a need existed to modify our PRO's 2004-2006 priorities to include develop funding strategies for a district plan to include the community center and its numerous programs under the CCSD Parks and Recreation Department, operation and maintenance of the community center, increasing Parks and Recreation Department staffing, thereby providing support for the community center and other related endeavors. On January 27, 2005, your board approved all of these modifications to the PROS 2004-2006 priorities. Therefore, on behalf of the PROS Commission, I am requesting that funds be made available for operation and maintenance of the community center and that they be approved at a level determined by your board.
And we do have a message from Rob Trask, who asked that his comment...
The board asked for some substantiation. Ms. Minnick talked about where the profit or loss statements, where the user, the use documentation show how many children or people are using the community center. Here we are. It's now. This is probably the third time that they've come before us asking for specific amounts of money, and we still do not have nuts and bolts documentation. If this were a grant application, and they submitted projections as a justification for $100,000, they would be summarily rejected. There's simply no substantiation. The problem here is that we live in Cambria, and this is a beautiful town, and we live here because it is a small, beautiful town, and it's tough to take positions against an organization that we all believe in. But if we feel that the organization is not being conducted responsibly, I can't speak for my colleagues, I don't like to make enemies in this town, and that's not my objective here. My objective is to do what's best for the community, and that's what I've always tried to do. And I'd rather not come out against the community center, but I have to come out against this board of directors that runs the community center and this management that runs the community center, because I agree with Ms. Minnick, it has been run irresponsibly. And I'm not going to go over all the levels of irresponsible business management practices that I think just cannot be tolerated. I cannot justify taking government money that we have to carefully monitor and give $50,000 to a business that's not run appropriately, that has a tax liability, that has been sued twice, and now we have another member of the community saying that she still is owed back pay. I mean, how many red flags can we put out there before we get the message that we cannot entrust this particular management with this particular board? A focus group is created. That's an excellent idea. The focus group recommends an audit. There is no audit. My staff here in CCSD says an audit is a good thing. Well, their focus group said the audit was a good thing literally 6 months ago. Does it make sense to give $100,000 and then conduct an audit when the focus group said 6 months ago we need to do an audit now because the financial situation of the organization is in crisis? Those were the words used by the center's own focus group. How can we justify, how can I look at my constituency and tell them, I'm going to give $100,000 to an organization that, under its own terms, calls itself an organization that is in financial crisis? I'm very disappointed at staff. Very, very disappointed. The other aspect of their own focus group was a complete overhaul of the directors. I haven't seen any of that. We have the forest management plan here. We have Mr. Hawley talks about setting a precedent. What's going to happen is we have a tradition in this town. There's no one on the board that's been in this town longer than I have. And we have a tradition in this town, some of our citizens talked about it, where volunteer spirit kicks in support, and they don't go out seeking public money. It's a tradition. It's well settled. I'm not saying we cannot give money, but at least we've got to justify it. We can't take this money that we have, this $100,000, this ERAF money that just came in, okay? And now we're going to spend it, and we're going to give it to an organization that is in crisis? Another speaker talked about precedent and protocol. Precisely. That's what the County of San Luis Obispo did when they got their UNICAL money. They invited all the nonprofits to submit justifications for money. We know what the truth is here. The truth is that there were members who were affiliated with the community center who immediately got in and put this matter on the agenda. That's not fair to the community. That served the interest of the few people who were in touch with the staff and the board of this CCSD board. That is not right. The finally, let me just say one other thing here. I don't take pleasure in doing this, and I don't feel good doing this. And God knows I don't enjoy reading the Cambrian and having people write in the Cambrian about how, well, I need to apologize because I'm doing my job. But when I hear comments like, don't let the center fail, no, don't lay it on us. That's something a child tells his parents. Daddy, I need money, I need money. Well, why don't you have money? I gave you an allowance last week. Well, I spent it. Well, you're not going to have any money, and I'm not going
to... What is it being attempted to be done there? I think that... I just saw it as a building when we moved it from here, and it's now fleshed out into an organization which I think is trying to be responsive to the community. Now, I don't think all the problems have been solved. There are many problems, and I think that everyone associated with the community center would agree there are problems that need to be solved. But I think that if we were to withdraw all this money that we've discussed, we would be really just literally pulling a plug on an organization. It would then just go into a limping mode, which means it would limp along until it finally died. And I don't want to see that happen. I want to see the community center develop into a flourishing center where youth are attracted and the rest of the community. I think, as Diane mentioned, working with teenagers does require people with particular skills, and they don't just walk in off the street and say, I'll volunteer my skills. They have to be employed. I think that there's an attempt to make the center friendly to all ages, and I think there's a real attempt being made there. I see results of that. And I think that staff here has made a lot of attempts to make certain the MOU is clear, that there are controls, they're in place, and that performance standards are set. These are really important. I think that an audit is going to be necessary, and I think as soon as possible or as soon as convenient. But I do think that right now that... This which is basically seed money that we are putting into the center will be valuable, and it will be a seed that will produce fruit. And so at this point, I think I'm in favor of it happening. Thank you.
Director Villeneuve.
Yeah, I'd like to echo some of the at least the generalized concerns and the position that my colleague Mr. Chaldicott has articulated. I don't see anything positive about just pulling a plug. I would agree with the fact that obviously the track record up to this point, for whatever reason, certainly has contributed to the problems that they're facing. But to just simply say, okay, well, the thing's falling apart, just walk away from it. That's going to lose what value that has been there. And I've been in and out of that building. And there are a lot of activities that are beyond just taking care of the youth. There are young mothers with their children, giving an opportunity for little toddlers to interact with one another. There's no place else in this community that does that. I think that the only way to resolve this is, I'm very concerned about how the money is going to be spent. My concerns are not relieved by seeing a list of activities that are planned. I would think that what we need to do, what I'd like to do, is to offer alternative plan, and that is that that the first $50,000 that's budgeted would then be, because we have the oversight, we're going to have either a CCSD board member, a staff member, or a volunteer that'll be on that board. We'll have oversight, very close oversight, on how the expenditures are made. And that would give a time for putting the house in order so they just don't let it collapse. I think it's too valuable to just walk away from. There is nothing else like this center available anywhere. There are a lot of very good nonprofit organizations working with youth, but this is a center that is serving a multiple set of community needs, and it should be given the chance to work its way out. And that may mean a change in management, a change in the way in which they operate. And if we have that oversight, and we see that they give it a chance to wait its way out of this, and hopefully a lot of the people that are working with other organizations would join in the effort to put this in a successful mode. I believe it's been a problem of a number of different problems. I won't go into details. But I'd like to see us take the risk of $50,000.
Come back to the CCSD board, presumably in July, to consider the second $50,000 component.
But I'd like to also have regular reports back from our liaison with the center.
I have some questions of staff. Patrick, I'd like to start with you. You've looked at the books of the community center. Is that correct? You have not. Okay.
No, I have not.
You interviewed the bookkeeper, is that right?
Not the bookkeeper. She's a CPA here in Cambria who actually does, I guess, their bookkeeping and keeps track of their financial records. And I did call her primarily because of what Director Funky Lou brought up in January about whether or not there's some other issues dangling about here. So I was more concerned about asking her if there was anything else sitting out there that, in terms of personnel or related issues, that could rear its ugly head. I wasn't concerned about I had just gotten a financial statement, and I said, does this fairly represent, to your knowledge, the financial condition of the community center? And she said, yes, it does, which, of course, does have the liabilities, and, of course, it's going to have the liabilities because it hasn't had the cash flow to pay them off. But I was mainly concerned in terms of my questioning of her, is there anything else that if the CCSD agrees to give the money to the community center, is that immediately going to open up the doors for a group of people coming in to just, hey, well, now they got some money, now I can settle my lawsuits with the community center? So that was the extent of my investigation.
And what was the answer to that question?
I am not aware of anything else that's sitting out there. She was familiar with the personnel issue that Director Funky Ballou brought up. She said, yes, that was unfortunate, it was a mistake, but to her knowledge, there's nothing else sitting out there.
Are you aware of any jeopardy with respect to the tax-exempt status that the state and federal governments have conferred on the community center?
That's a good question, and I don't know the answer to that. That's a good question.
Question for counsel. Could the failure to pay withholding and other taxes to the state and federal governments jeopardize the Internal Revenue Service granting of a 501c3 designation for this organization or the State Franchise Tax Board as far as the state is concerned?
It could eventually jeopardize it. I've represented nonprofits in the past, and what normally happens is they will contact you and actually, because you're a nonprofit, allow you to enter into payment agreements, and then you have to maintain your agreement with them to catch up.
Wendy, I have a question for you. Do you have an agreement with respect to the payment of the back taxes that are owed?
Yes, I've been working. We've actually made payments in the amount of about $5,000. I don't know the exact dollar amount. I'd have to go back and pull it up. But yes, we have an agreement. I have, her name is Jody. She's out of the Santa Barbara office. We talk weekly, and she's very aware of our situation and willing to work with us so that we can get back to where we need to be, and then we'll be paying our payroll taxes monthly as opposed to quarterly or every few months when they come up to $2,500 or more.
Thank you. Patrick, another question for you. When you interviewed the certified public accountant, did she indicate whether an audit of the books has ever been performed?
I did not ask her that question. But I suspect that really is a question to ask Wendy Sheridan, whether or not they've ever been audited.
Let me ask you this. How long would an audit take and how much would it cost?
In looking at their revenue and not knowing how many transactions they've got, I would guess it probably wouldn't be too bad because they don't have a whole lot of employees. So they're...
I was thinking about $3,000.
Yeah, maybe about $2,000 to $3,000.
About $2,000 to $3,000, and what kind of time frame would it require to produce an audited financial statement?
Depending upon the status of their records, if they've got the records there and they've got the supporting documentation behind their disbursements, and somebody wants to look at their receipts and it's all there, it goes fairly smoothly, but if they don't have a lot of this documentation on hand that can be reviewed and looked at, then it's going to be time-consuming. So it's really a question of just how well in order.
So I would rather wait until I had the proceeds from the bike ride to pay for it.
What if you had no choice?
Then I'd find a way to do it.
Okay. Tammy, let's talk for a moment about the general fund. The condition of the general fund and the amount of savings that can be accrued by eliminating some items and total it up and see where we go. First of all, you mentioned that the $75,000 that has been budgeted for the incorporation study is not going to be entirely spent this year. Is that right?
That's right. As of the date of my staff report for tonight's management partners item, I believe there had been $10,000 expended working with the Blue Ribbon Citizen Committee. And then this item tonight was $30,000, so that would be a total of $40,000. So that would leave about $35,000.
$35,000.
That's the number I wrote down.
And then there's a staff position that has been funded by the general fund.
The administrative staff member that Patrick talked about tonight, in his report he listed $34,000. Is that correct, Patrick?
That is correct.
For this year's savings?
Yeah.
Just this year's.
Can I make a comment on that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The intent not filling that position was to save the district some money. And I would feel a little, and this is no reflection on a community center and what you're attempting to accomplish, but I do feel I have to stand up and say that I would feel a little awkward if I asked our existing staff to go ahead and take on these added duties and then we turned right around and used that money and put it someplace else. And again, I don't
understand.
This is no reflection on the community center, but it would put me in a very awkward situation.
Understood.
And I really could not... I would feel awkward supporting that. I could not support that.
Then there's a fire department position that
Do you have any idea about an estimate?
Had been budgeted for the entire year.
What's the estimate that you would give since the vacancy?
I would estimate, since Captain Peterson's been gone, our prevention officer, that we would have approximately $30,000 in salary and probably somewhere in the neighborhood of between $4,500 and $7,000 in PERS, retirement, and under benefits packages not expended.
And that's entirely general fund money?
Yes.
That's entirely fire department general fund money.
Estimated that up to $50,000. I think that's realistic, given what material supplies and everything that position would use, $50,000 for the assistant fire chief, the vacancy for that position.
Okay. My concern is principally a budgetary one, and I expressed that concern at the last meeting, and I voted against this proposal on the basis of the financial information that we were given at the last meeting. I have since spent a considerable amount of time going over the general fund budget, the water enterprise fund, and the wastewater enterprise fund, because I am very concerned, as is Patrick Bradley and the rest of us, with the perception on the part of Wall Street and our bondholders that we're not meeting our coverage ratios. The budgeting that we do and the manner in which we account for expenses, particularly with respect to staff time, is something to behold. It is not the easiest system in the world, but it does attempt to fairly allocate among the different funds that we manage how staff time is allocated. So, for example, if there's a position in the main office in which the person filling that position spends part-time on general fund matters and part-time on wastewater matters and part-time on water matters, that person's time is allocated amongst those three funds. So the long and the short of it is, of all the funds that we have, the healthiest, and Patrick, I think you would agree with this, the healthiest is the general fund. The general fund does have a surplus even with this community center item budgeted for. Now, it's not much of a surplus, and I'm a little concerned that we don't have a sufficient general fund reserve. Sections that deal with the formation and operation of community services districts. And very clearly, very explicitly, community services districts are authorized to engage in recreation programs. So in my view, in terms of the legality of this kind of an expenditure, the legislature has specifically authorized us to spend money in this area. So that gets me back to the present community center. I'm very concerned about taxpayer money going to an organization that has a track record that calls into question some past management practices and a seeming inability to raise a sufficient amount of money to cover the debts that it has incurred along the way. Having said all of that, I think I'm willing to dip my toe into the water, so to speak, but not plunge in head first. I think that we owe the community center a chance to prove itself, but I don't want to put all of the money that has been requested at risk. So I'm looking for some middle ground, and I was pleased to hear that Director Villeneuve has given this some thought and has come up with a compromise. Building on that suggestion of Director Villeneuve, I have to tell you, I can only support that kind of a recommendation if there is an audit that is done and presented to the district, and it has to be to the satisfaction of our finance officer, and that would be a necessary prerequisite, as far as I'm concerned, to appropriating any money for this activity, number one. Number two, I think we need to get back to the MOU and have this money parceled out, if we're going to approve it, on a monthly basis. I'm concerned that Section 1 of the MOU has stricken from it the sentence that provides these funds will be distributed in 6 equal payments. The inference is left over that the money would be given to the community center in one lump sum, unless I'm missing something.
It's here. Just because there's only 4 months or 3 months to allocate it until the end of the fiscal year.
3 months or 4 months. I would want it parceled out in monthly payments, and that's just for the purpose of making sure that we don't run into difficulties with the Internal Revenue Service over the 501c3 status of the organization, or the State Franchise Tax Board's conferring a tax-exempt status on the organization, and any other contingent liabilities that may be out there that we're not aware of. I think we have to be extremely careful in terms of how we approach this. So having said all of that, if somebody can kind of compress all of this into a motion, maybe we can get on with this item.
Don't look at me.
I'm not.
Well,
it's all in the record.
It's in the record.
Could we... it's unprecedented to say just whatever we said, let's put it together. Someone else can pull it out and put it together, and then we'll agree to it.
If in number one we just add in these funds will be distributed in equal payments, that would be over the... We wouldn't put the six in there. That would then do that.
Right. That would take care of that.
Since it's late, maybe I'm brave and want to make an attempt at the modifications to that
would be appropriate.
One, and I
probably just want to get home.
And that too.
That's what I'm
but
trying to do.
If I, as for paragraph number one, what I'm suggesting is that it be modified after the receipt and approval of an audit acceptable to the CCSD. The CCSD will provide for the fiscal year 2004-2005. A total of $50,000 in funding to the center to be used for budgeted community events and fundraising activities for community recreational purposes. These funds will be distributed in equal monthly payments. Now, if that's acceptable, the question I have as far as the next paragraph in the agreement, what you would like to provide for that. This, as it currently reads for the benefit of the audience, is that an additional $50,000 will be budgeted for that. Do you want to strike that and consider it with staff direction?
I think we need a provision that has this issue coming back to the board in July for further consideration.
So if we strike it and renumber it, and part of your motion is the direct staff to come back in the July time frame with additional requests. In consideration.
That's correct, and we need a status report on the expenditures of the CCSD's money up to that point.
Can I get a point of clarification? Now we're talking about an audit. We're referring to a financial audit here,
financial
not a program audit,
audit
or correct. An efficiency audit, just a raw
financial audit.
Audit. Okay,
correct.
Okay, then
we
what is an efficiency audit?
Well, it's, you know, are they doing what their charter says they will do? Are they performing all of these youth activities or other activities that their bylaws state that they shall do? Are they being done in an effective, efficient manner? Mm-hmm. Are they doing the programs that they're established to do versus are they properly recording and accounting for on generally accepted accounting principles their revenues and expenditures? In other words, just a raw financial data.
Do financial people do efficiency audits?
I don't know of any that do. There might be some that do. I've never done one, but
that's why I was curious why you asked about that.
But, you know, they have program audits or efficiency audits, you know, those that type of thing, and financial audits. That's why I wanted to get clarification here.
I think the key to making sure that the money is being spent appropriately, that the programs are appropriate and so forth, lies in the concept of having the community center amend its bylaws to have a member of the CCSD Board of Directors participate as a board member, even if it's ex officio, or somebody that this board appoints. And that oversight function, I think, will result in reports back to us as to whether or not the center is running operationally, programmatically, as it should.
I might add that, that since Mr. Ellman's report on proposal by PROS to become proactive involved, I don't mean that as a pun, but they're going to be involved in the programs and the operation as well. So they'll have, I would assume, have a position on the board, but at least there's going to be a multiple effort to try to make the effort to avoid the problems they've had in the past and put it on an even keel. So it's a multiple, not just having a member of our staff or board member, but then we also have our PROS Commission becoming involved.
Sure.
PROS Commission do not represent, are not elected officials, do not represent the community. What I hear Mr. President Sanders saying is someone from the board.
That would be my preference.
And the first person jumps out is President Sanders, since he studied all those financial statements.
I just don't have the time. I'm sorry.
Excuse me, President Sanders?
As my father used to say, I'm spread thinner than delicatessen cheese.
Well, my name was delicatessen. We cut them real thin.
Real thin, right. Exactly.
President Sanders?
Yes.
I recognize their format here. This is all done in QuickBooks, and QuickBooks would be any auditor can come in and follow QuickBooks.
Okay.
Their accounting software here is QuickBooks.
Good. So that means that the audit should be fairly easy.
I would think so.
Okay. I have one more question, and that's a question of Wendy Sheridan. Can you live with all of these constraints?
Yes. Could I ask for some clarification, though?
Sure.
Originally, if this money would have come at the first vote, it would have been coming monthly, which is what I was expecting. I wasn't that, which was the way I wanted it, monthly, so that it would serve us better that way. So my question then is, if this money is intended for the 2004-2005 fiscal year, that's almost over. So is this money that's going to be coming in the next 4 months only to be spent on activities, only to be allotted for programs, events, community events over the next 4 months or over this last whole fiscal year? I just want clarification on that so I'm clear.
My view is that this is all subject to review in July. I think the board is going to look very carefully at how the CCSD's money has been spent. If all $50,000 has been spent and it's very appropriate in terms of how it's been spent, then I don't think there's a problem. If there's a surplus left over, as far as I'm concerned, it can carry over to the next fiscal year, but it's subject to the presentation by the community center of another budget, and we just need to see where the money is going to go.
Okay. So this last clarification I need is you need the audit report before the agreement is final and the money's
correct.
Come to us.
Correct.
Yeah. Actually, we can finalize the agreement before the money is released according to the modifications. Patrick would have to approve an audit.
The money would not be released until the audit
Is approved.
Approved.
Okay.
Right. And quite frankly, I'm going to look to Patrick Bradley for his input as to whether the audit is satisfactory.
Okay.
And if I understand correctly, if Patrick approves it, there's no need to come back to the board. If he approves it, and the money can be released.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to do anything to get me off my track here, the coverage ratio, huh?
You're an exciting guy, Patrick. This is going to be real fun for you.
Okay, so I'm responsible for giving the audit report to Patrick, and Patrick will report back to the board.
Yes.
Okay.
I would suggest meeting with Patrick, so whatever you produce is the type of audit that is acceptable to him.
Okay.
Okay. I think Wendy was asking, in what way are you going to disperse it since there's only 4 months left? I mean, what increments?
No, I was clear on that.
Yeah.
And I understand. So if it takes us a month to get an audit, then...
It shouldn't.
Okay.
I'm wondering with tax time whether there's auditors hanging around
yeah.
looking for work until the 15th.
I'll do my best to get it sooner than a month. Mm. Anything else?
That's all I have. Any other questions?
I don't have questions, but since my position does not look too hot, let me do a little fallback here. I would really like staff, if this issue comes back, assuming that this motion passes in part or whatever, I would like to pick the baton up that was passed to me by Mr. Bradley. I would like some data, some real data, as to how many people use the facility. I'd like some kind of a track record. They should have some sign-up sheets. I want copies of the sign-up sheets. I want to see whether the community center is truly, as it's being represented to us, an essential recreational hub of this community. And I want to know if many people use it, or some people use it, or a few people use it, or a handful of people use it.
I agree with that.
That's the most
request.
Important piece of data that has yet to be provided. I want staff to dig it up.
Yeah.
Please. Pretty please.
I agree with that. We need to have... we first need to make sure that the audit is satisfactory, that we're not putting public money in any kind of jeopardy. And I think we need to exercise some good oversight, and we need to determine at the end of this trial run whether or not the community center is actually fulfilling the need in the community that the community center says is there. And so the best way to do that, I think, is with the statistical information that you're requesting. Any other discussion?
I'm a little concerned about the measurement because that right now the measurement would occur 1st of July, I guess. And that's halfway through the summer. Lots of programs won't have started or will be halfway through. I think we'll have a difficulty in making having a clear understanding of what the center is doing. I'm a little concerned that we'll be sort of saying, well, we have half a loaf, but we don't know how big the other half is.
I just want to say I don't have any problem with providing that information. Okay, I can provide it for the past year. I'm working on the annual report right now. I'll give you the numbers for our teen center and our other programs and our camp registrations and tot time and all of our other things that will be going on. So that is not a problem. I'll give it to I can do it before July. I'll give it to Patrick with the audit. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Is there a motion?
I'd like to make the motion if I could figure out how to phrase it.
Well, I think the council has framed the motion pretty well. If you just want to move the motion as drafted by the council.
Actually, it's approval of the resolution that which will approve right. or execution the modified agreement. So if you just move for the resolution.
Well, that, I can do that.
But as modified by our discussion.
Yeah.
Don, go ahead.
Okay.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No. Right here.
3-1. Motion carries.
Okay.
I don't know if you wanted to assign a board member now to participate in the other meetings or wait, because we'll have to wait a month.
Board members, what's your pleasure? Director Chaldicott? Director Funky Baloo?
Sure. I've got plenty of time.
Is there a motion to appoint one of our board members to the Community Center Board of Directors?
Is there a volunteer?
I don't have the time.
Well, I don't think anybody's got the time, but...
Did I just volunteer?
Oh, is that you volunteering?
Yeah. I just volunteer.
He's on volunteer.
I got plenty of time.
Well, I hope you go there with an objective point of view.
If not, you can always complain to the DA that I violated the Brown Act.
Yeah. I'd like to make a observation. This is a really unfortunate situation because... there are so many people here that I know are very concerned about the issues with not just the youth, but you know the availability for a place for even adults to find interesting things. This is not a town that's overwhelmed with all kinds of things to do, and I would like to. I would like to see whatever personality problems or difficulties in the past that would all rise above these issues and try to support what is potentially the center for most of the activities that the youth could be involved with, as well as a broader spectrum with some of the young mothers who don't have an opportunity to get out because they're tied down with their little youngsters that aren't in school, preschoolers. And there's I've watched them. The interaction, I've been in there. It's really, I'm delighted. I don't have any grandchildren, so probably that's the reason why I've got such a interest in little toddlers. But there is an opportunity, and if we could all look at this as a positive effort and see that that the potential for it is accomplished, then I think we'd probably all profit from it. The community certainly would.
Jerry, real brief, please.
Yes, so long as discussion is going on after the motion has been voted on, I hope you will recognize that what you did vote on says the money is going to be used toward budgeted community events and fundraising activities, not to pay off tax debts and those other kinds of
absolutely.
Things.
Absolutely. That
Thank
is
you.
Correct. Okay. Are we going to appoint a board member to sit on the Community Center Board of Directors? If not, we can defer it to the next meeting.
Clear?
Well, I think it takes board action. Are you making a motion?
No, I thought you were receiving invitations.
No, I didn't call for volunteers. Somebody else did. Let's just put it off until the April meeting.
I don't think it should be just limited to board members. I mean, if there's a member of the PROS Commission, for example, because they've already expressed their interest in being involved.
We can determine in April whether it will be one of our own members or whether we're going to appoint somebody. So, General Manager, would you put that on the agenda? Thank you. Yes, we did vote on the matter. It's getting late. The next item is public comment. I have no request to speak. Seeing nobody from the audience that wants to step up, meeting is adjourned.